Members of the public in the gallery, I declare the meeting open at 9:34. I'd like to start, if I may, by acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet, and like to pay respect to their elders past, present and future, and extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australians who may be present this morning. Just a quick reminder of public conduct at meetings under Section 32 of our standing orders, that all members of the public present at a meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs, must remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring the meeting, bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present, be suitably dressed. I ask you to please turn off your mobile devices or at least to silent mode, and if you must take a call, please leave the chambers to do so. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for such a period that the chairperson decides, and that could include future meetings. Leave of absence. So we don't have any leaves of absence, but we do have an apology from Councillor Paul Gleeson, which will be noted. And with that, I'll move on to item three, which is our devotional segment. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Pastor Stephen Thomas from the South Redlands Baptist Church to lead council in a devotional segment. Over to you.
Thank you, Mayor Williams, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to share with you this morning from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. As evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's cross to the other side of the lake." So they took Jesus in the boat and started out, leaving the crowds behind, although other boats followed. But soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat, and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up, shouting, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?" When Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the water, "Silence, be still." Suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm. Then he asked them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" The disciples were absolutely terrified. "Who is this man?" they asked each other. "Even the wind and waves obey him." I would just like to share very briefly some thoughts that anchor back to that passage. Last Sunday, I had opportunity to visit a different congregation to my own, as I had a week off, which meant I didn't need to listen to my own preaching for a change. Mm-hmm. And it was a special day of testimony and song in that church from men who had been in jail. And the biggest reason that repeatedly those men stated that they ended up in jail was because of a lack of a positive father figure in their lives. Those thoughts were confirmed to me a number of years ago by the general manager at the Woodford Prison, where I was part of a community reference group. And he said the biggest reason so many of these people end up in jail is because of a lack of a good father figure. And the young men the other day made a second point. The biggest issue on release, why so many end up back in jail, is discouragement. Relationships might break down. They find it hard to get a job because who wants to employ a next prisoner? They said they need a positive environment and above all a mentor, a father figure. And the young man running the Restore Ministry in that church stood there proudly in front of the congregation with his young wife and baby standing beside him because he had had that positive input. And as I think about public life, I realise in talking to many councillors that it can be discouraging. There is the issue of state red tape which constrains or even forces a certain course of action. There's the competing interest of residents and ratepayers who all have concerns that they are rightly passionate about. There is the simple fact of limited funds to share around and the angst and second thoughts which might come from decisions that you make. So you could easily focus on the discouragement, like the young men who end up back in jail, or even the fear of the disciples who are overwhelmed by the storm. Or you have two options. You can focus and follow the advice of 1 Corinthians 9:22 of I try to find common ground with everyone. And for those of you who have faith, you can look to the words of Jesus in the midst of the storm and the discouragement. Silence, be still. Let me pray for you. Lord God, this morning, as our counsellors make decisions, as they consider things for the benefit of this city, as, Lord, they face things which are hard to reconcile, things which could cause them discouragement. Lord, I ask for them that they would look to your words of peace, be still. And that, Lord, they would each, as best as they can, look to the guidance of the Apostle Paul. I try to find common ground with everyone. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Councillors, we move on to the next item, which is our recognition of achievement. I don't believe I've been advised by any councillors in regards to mentioning anyone today. If not, Councillor Edwards, your microphone's on. I might just take this opportunity to acknowledge an amazing Redlander that we recently lost. I had the great pleasure of attending his funeral yesterday, and I do say pleasure. It was a very pleasurable experience to understand that one of our own had such a great commitment not only to his Christianity but to our city. I'm referring to a man that we fondly know as Cor Fredericks, and Cor has an incredible history that goes beyond the boundaries of Redlands, basically being an immigrant to this country and establishing himself as a well-known, respected individual, and that was also demonstrated by the number of people that actually attended his service. Cor was well-known for setting up Brisbane galleries here in Redlands and also, of course, his accountancy business called C. Fredericks and Associates. He semi-retired to a cattle property in Longreach in 1978 after he was a practising accountant with other firms. And when he said semi-retired, the truth is that Cor never retired from anything. In fact, he was working pretty much up until the day that he found out he was not going to be with us for much longer. So he was 89 and 6 weeks off being 90 and still was very committed to his community, to his faith and to his business interests. He actually studied his way through life and continued to do that. He was still actually studying and searching a certificate from London in regards to business management, even at 89. He started as a certified public accountant in 1991, as we know, with C. Fredericks and Associates, and then became Fredericks Accountants. He obtained a scholarship to study at the Western Australian University in Perth, and that's what brought him to Australia. And on the 1st of March 1951, as an assisted migrant from the Netherlands and became a citizen in 1956. Through his eulogy, there were many things that we learnt about Cor, but it's fair to say that he was a very organised business person to the point that he had organised his eulogy and everything about his funeral before he departed. He was very fond of the fact that he was born on the same day as Martin Luther King and shared many of those values. He had 18 grandchildren stand up on the pulpit yesterday, and for each one of them, he had given them a message of a value in life that he wanted them to take forward. 18 messages, and I can't repeat them all, but they were of strong value, commitment to community, being true to oneself, not being swayed by opposition when you believe in something, his faith, and the children range from the age of about 3 to about 23. So he was very, very well organised, even in the face of death, and he faced death with great courage because of his Christian faith. I'd like to particularly acknowledge the fact that Cor Fredericks has been an amazing contributor to various things in the city. He had a great dedication to helping people in need, and particularly our young people. He was a constant contributor and sponsor of the Merrill Prayer Breakfast, which has seen over $50,000 supporting our school chaplaincy. And I will have my last fond memory of Cor Fredericks at the Merrill Prayer Breakfast this year, where he was just so thrilled to be there. And I think I was kissed in about four or five different places on my face. He was just so thrilled that he could participate in what has been a wonderful event for school chaplaincy. So it's with sadness that we say goodbye, but I think it's fair to say that we can celebrate a great life, and we can certainly learn from the values that each of his grandchildren talked about yesterday. And we certainly pass on our condolences to the family, because he will be a big loss not only to his city, but to his family and his friends. So with that, we acknowledge the great work of Cor Fredericks. Okay, moving on. We have the receipt and confirmation of minutes, and if I could have a mover and seconder that the minutes of the general meeting held on the 6th of September be confirmed. Mover, Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Any items of correctness? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Matters outstanding from minutes of previous general meeting, I'll just hand over to the CEO to give a quick update. Move straight to public participation, and we have been advised of a couple of speakers today, but before we invite those speakers up, I might just get a motion from councillors, move and seconded that we adjourn the meeting for 15 minutes to allow this public participation segment. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Just before I ask the first speaker to come up, we just have a few guidelines as to how we present ourselves in public participation segment. You may have noticed the signage in the chambers actually refers to that, and it is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name, their suburb or organisation that they represent, and the subject they wish to speak about. The information will be recorded in the minutes of this meeting, which is a public document, and it's available for inspection at Council's administration building, and it will be published on Council's website. So you also need to be aware that the meeting is being recorded in audio video, and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. Just a quick reminder of the guidelines again. Any person addressing council must state their name and suburb, the organisation they represent, the subject they wish to speak about. Stand unless you're unable to do so, and if so, please let us know. Act and speak with decorum, be respectful and courteous, make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. And as chairperson, it's my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant material in making my decision to allow or disallow a person from addressing the local government. It's also my responsibility to give priority to members of the public who have made a written application to the CEO to address the meeting, and also to determine the number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes, depending on the number of speakers, and I believe we probably have three all up, two that have written and one that's come this morning. And it is also my responsibility, if necessary, to withdraw the approval to address council before that time period elapses. Just for those who may require a hearing loop, please let us know. If so, we'll bring the microphone to you. All right, so we do have a written application from Margaret. If Margaret would like to, is Margaret here? Margaret, would you like to just approach the microphone and just as you approach? Oh, Rosemary, no problems. So, Rosemary, I think you know the drill. Just to state your name, suburb or the organisation you represent, and please begin when you're ready. Thanks, Rosemary.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My name is Rosemary Skelly. I live at Victoria Point, and I'm here today representing the Redlands Baha'i community. Is that all you require? Okay. Yes, I'm here today with Margaret Jacobi, who is also a member of the Redlands Baha'i community. And we'd just like to tell you as a council that on the weekend of the 21st and the 22nd of October, Baha'is all over the world will celebrate the bicentenary of the birth of Baha'u'llah, the founder of the Baha'i faith. 200 years after his birth, the faith has spread to virtually every country in the world. As part of the bicentenary celebrations, recognition of the faith is being expressed in many different ways throughout the world. In Australia, the National Spiritual Assembly is holding a reception in the public alcove at Parliament House in Canberra, and all members of Parliament have been invited. Messages of support have also been received from many of our leaders, including the Premier of Queensland, who has acknowledged the contributions that have been made by the Queensland Baha'i community, with thanks for ongoing efforts in local development activities to strengthen our communities. The Baha'i community has been established for over 40 years here in the Redlands, which currently consists of 51 adults, youth and children. Baha'is in the Redlands include people who were born in Australia and also people who immigrated to Australia from other countries. Baha'is around the world and here in Cleveland are establishing neighbourhood groups where young people between the ages of 12 and 15 come together to develop community service projects. As Baha'is, we believe that religions of the world are connected and that the purpose of Baha'u'llah was to bring a message of unity to mankind. We believe in equality between men and women. We believe in the universal right to education, with education including the spiritual principles and the virtues of trustworthiness, generosity and kindness. We believe that there are spiritual solutions to economic problems and that we should all view the world as one country and mankind its citizens. We would like to, or we have already passed on, a small gift for each of the councillors as a gift to them and also an invitation to a social celebration of the bicentenary, which will take place in Cleveland at the Lions Club Hall on Saturday the 21st of October from 6:30 p.m. So we do hope that some of you will be able to join us and enjoy meeting people on a social basis within our Redlands community who follow this example of Baha'u'llah's teachings. Ye are the fruits of one tree and the leaves of one branch. Deal ye one with another with the utmost love and harmony, with friendliness and fellowship. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Ms. Kelly. All right, our next speaker is Pamela Serson. Did I say that correctly? Thank you. From Thornlands, if you'd like to approach and please state your name, suburb, and subject you wish to speak about. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Karen. Good morning, Mayor Karen Williams and councillors. My name is Pamela Josephine Serson, and I live at 43 Ziganfuse Road, Thornlands. I'm here today to address the Redlands City Council to raise concerns of a development application of MCU 01397 for undefined use of rooming accommodation for the property at 41 Ziganfuse Road, Thornlands. That's next door to us. I've lived in the Redlands Council in Thornlands for over 20 years, and a lot of our people in the area have also been in over 20 years or more. So we've seen a lot of changes. Many residents have raised concerns about the development. I have submitted a petition of over 60 signatures of nearby residents and families of the schools. More residents may have contributed. However, the application process had occurred and I didn't get it through to the school holiday period. First, I wish to say the owners of 41 Ziganfuse Road, when they purchased the place, their daughter was stated that their daughter was living in the place and she was just renting out the rooms, and that was okay. We first observed the property had been modified in 2016. We were away for over 4 months and we came back and noticed it. It was modified to allow individual rooms to be tenanted with their own individual access. Our understanding that these modifications may not have been previously approved by a registered building authority or council, so we're not sure there. Firstly, the application process for undefined use of rooming accommodation, which is the very nature, is nubilous and is not specified enough to clearly specify the proposed current or future use of the property. This is very concerning. Siginfuse Road, as you already know, is subject to considerable traffic congestion due to our two wonderful major schools within the block. We have Carmel College and Bayview schools. Residents have previously raised concerns about the parking in the streets, and the tenants at 41 have commonly parked on the street outside our property and frequently parked in the streets, including long-term parking of a trailer in a street. Now, the street's very small and it's hard to see. The property in question is located on the brow of a rise, which makes a difference to additional vehicles to be parked in the access and leave the street. Now, with six rooms, could be more, proposed, well, that would be up to two people a room. So that's 12. So that's 12 extra vehicles that's added to this accommodation, allegedly, plus we've got a trailer, and that's adding to the congestion of the streets. I would ask councillors to consider whether or not council wants to see this type of multiple developments appear in the Redlands area. By its very nature, short-term rooming accommodations are likely to attract itinerant tenants, which may result in adverse consequences for family and children attending the schools close by. So we've got a primary and a secondary school in Siginfuse Road. Queensland Government, which I have a copy of, released and indicated that they propose to use short-term tenancies to locate offenders on bail. We have already experienced with such one facilities in Woodlands, which is now closed. These issues therefore impact on securities, families and residents. And in saying that, if the Queensland Government wants to do that, I don't think it's fair that they put also these people in, like if they're offenders, into a situation where they should feel safe and secure and not be in an environment where they're always questioned. I believe there should be a better place for them too, not just place there and the box is ticked. So it is proposed undefined use of existing houses for multiple room tenancy is a complaint with the Redland City Council development plan. Is that on your development plan? Is the property just classified as a normal house for rating purposes? The multiple occupancy of the modified house may result into additional fire risk due to the lack of specific designs and constructions of fire safety. So I don't know if they've even looked at that. We submit that modifying a normal house for this type of use may significantly adverse effects of the property and the valuations of our homes in Siginfuse Road. We've been there for over 20 years, and a lot of us, as I have stated, and all of a sudden our homes can be devalued. I don't think that is fair. The existing unapproved multiple occupancy at 41 has also resulted in additional noise pollution due to the residents' activity, including noisy music. And you've got six different, like it's like a unit, six different people. In summary, many residents are concerned, and they really are concerned, that the proposed undefined multiple use occupancy of 41 Siginfuse Road will significantly adverse affect security for families and children attending the nearby schools. Because once damage is done, you can't undo it. We need to protect our children, because when it's a rooming accommodation, These are transit people. So please consider it. That is the greatest concern, plus the congestion and the parking of Zinkenfuse Road is horrendous. The modification of the house to use for boarding facility is highly likely to adversely affect the property values, as I stated before, and the quality of life for the residents. I ask you to really consider this and help us as the changes. The biggest effect that I, when I was getting the petition and knocking on the doors, was families of the schools of their children. And we need to protect our next generation that's coming through as well. And that's really important. So I thank you for listening to my words. And I wish to hand over my petition and the letters from some of the residents to our wonderful district councillor, Mr. Paul Golly. So, Mr. Golly, I hope you accept this. Thank you. And thank you, councillors, for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Serson. I believe I also have another speaker. Is it Mr. Raniger? If you'd like to approach the microphone. Quick reminder, Mr. Raniger, just to state your name, suburb, organisation you represent, and you may start when you're ready. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. Allow me to introduce myself. My name's Dr. Prashant Raniger, and I'm a principal dentist at Raniger Dental at Victoria Point Shopping Centre. Is that all you wanted to know? Yeah. I purchased this practice back in 2003 from my predecessor, Rod O'Sullivan, and who one of the best advisors that he gave to me was to see patients at the nursing home. Over time, what I've noticed in my clinic that my younger and able clientele has grown, but also my aging and special care clientele has grown as well. My visits to go to the nursing home has gone from going once a fortnight to practically every day now. And for that, I actually did an application, which was MCU 013762. What I'm trying to achieve over here is to deliver a more thorough, high-quality care to these geriatric and special needs patients. Over time, my mobile dental equipments have been upgraded, but despite that, there are always procedures that I can't possibly perform in the nursing home. And for that, these patients have to come to the surgery. So I thought I have to bridge this gap. And for these procedures, I actually, which was why I proposed to take this extra step. Now, Australian Dental Association has actually done a lot of research in this field of geriatric dentistry. It's not an actual specialty on its own, but it is a field. And if you ever get a chance to have a look at the link of the www.gcsilverlink.com.au, it actually talks about aging bringing complexities, looking for change, and so on and so forth. But just in very brief, what they are saying, and I agree with that because I've been treating these patients since 2003 now, and in order to treat these patients more thoroughly, we do need to factor in physical implications, medical implications, social implications, and emotional implications. We do need to factor that into account. What I'm trying to achieve over here is a branch clinic from my main clinic. My main clinic is at Shop 23 Victoria Point Shopping Centre, but also having a branch clinic, which I propose at 39 Bunker Road, where I could address these implications a lot more thoroughly. Some of the benefits that these special care needs patients would get would be, A, privacy, as you know, that branch would be devoted purely for those patients. Also the fact that ease of parking, as 39 Bunker Road is on a half an acre lot, and we can supply enough disabled car parking slots, and I think we were giving about 16 car parking. It's also close proximity to a lot of nursing homes, like it's right opposite Renaissance Retirement Village, and it provides a more homely environment in attempt to address for physical, social, and emotional implications. When most patients come to the dentist, they're pretty scared and phobic as it is, and then on top of that, if you try to add the fact that they couldn't find parking and sharing rooms with a lot of other younger clientele and things like that, it can affect the patient's psychology a lot. Now, Australian Dental Association have also said to me that if it does, if this proposition does get approved, that they would also assist me in sort of internally designing my surgery so I can cater for these needs a lot better. One thing good about that particular house is that just the size of the rooms, because for dental surgeries, you need to have X amount of room. You don't want to go too much bigger, and you can't have it too congested either. So a lot of thinking was actually placed into that, for choosing the actual property. One of the articles that I did give also talked about, addressed a lot of factors in terms of, like how to design the surgery and so on and so forth. Now, the reason why they're also helping me out in this is that in Southeast Queensland, there are sort of two parties that are providing such service, and I'm in this sort of scale, and I'm one of them. And so really, there aren't too many dental practitioners that are actually going to nursing homes to provide this kind of service. For my younger and able patients, there's no changes for them, as they will be seeing me in the main clinic, which I have just expanded and renovated as well. I've also extended my lease with centre management for another 4 years. To the counsellors, I humbly ask them to support me in this venture so that we can provide a much better care for these elderly and special needs patients. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Renninger. Thank you. Are there any other speakers in the gallery? If not, I'll ask for a mover and second that we resume our meeting proceedings. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Petitions and presentations. Councillor Golley has a petition. It's not the original because it's already been received by our development assessment crew, but you'd like to table that, Councillor Golley.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'd like to table this petition from the 76-plus residents who have signed this petition. It's in relation to the dwelling house of undefined use, rooming accommodation at 41 Ziganfuse Road. If I could just mention very briefly...
You'll just need to get a mover and seconder that be received. Have you got them up that before you speak to it? Yeah, ask for it to be received.
Oh, could I ask for that to be received, please?
Move, Councillor Golley. And I guess, and referred to the appropriate department, which would be how we'd normally, which has already been received.
Yep.
So move, Councillor Golley, seconded Councillor Boglari. Now you may speak to it, Councillor Golley.
Oh, thanks, Madam Chair. Residents first approached me in relation to this matter back in 2016, and it became referred as a CR to council to have compliance officers look into the matter. It's understood that that actually triggered an event where the owner of the property ejected the compliance officers and wouldn't allow them on the property to have a look at what was actually going on. Residents then contacted me further, and an application was made to upgrade the development and put that application forward for assessment. In that time, there's been more and more residents within Thornlands contact my office. It's led to this petition to be formed. There's more documentation here over and above the petition. The residents clearly don't want to have what could be perceived as a halfway house set on that street. Everything that Pam has actually mentioned, I can refer to as well. All those issues have been raised. There has been an issue of an elderly resident's already been contacted in their home by one of the tenants. It was quite alarming to that elderly resident. Over and above that, you have all the traffic issues, the schools that are being impacted, etc. There has been multitudes of coming and goings from that particular project. It is impacting to the point where even a CR to have yellow lines put in through our traffic compliance people, they're just being ignored. It appears that this particular development is not suited to that area. I have called it in, and I would urge the support to actually strongly look at this project in its form. Is it really something we want on Ziegenfuse Road in the middle of Thornlands? Thank you.
So we have a motion, Councillor, to receive, councillors, to receive that petition and refer it to the department as sorry been received with the extra information. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors.
Cheers.
Order of business. I haven't been advised of any changing of our order of business, councillors. So we'll move on to just a quick reminder of your material, personal interest and conflict of interest as is required and your responsibility under the Local Government Act 2009. I believe there's a summary of your responsibilities attached to your agenda, and with that we'll move straight on to our reports to council. The first one is 11.1.1. And it's our August 2017 monthly financial report. Councillor Boglar, you move that. And I've got a seconder for that. Thanks, councillors. Councillor Tracy Hughes will second that. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Thank you. In relation to our monthly financials for August, there's a really good executive summary for everybody on page 3 of 15. 8 out of the 11 KPIs have met. With our carryovers, from Council on the 23rd of August, the revised budget in the report reflects the new Capital Works program of $85 million. The Capital Works program is $500,000 below at the moment, at the end of August, and the impacts of the 16-17 asset revaluations are flowing through depreciation, and officers are complying submissions for the first budget review later this calendar year. And as we all know, depreciation is the thing which we're keeping an eye on. Also in this financial summary on page 3, it actually shows the cost of mowing. This is one thing which we've now included because it's something which is of interest to all our residents. And with summer coming on, everyone always wants their park mowed an extra, you know, mow, and we're trying to just show people where the money is spent. And year to date, $290,000 has already been spent just on mowing alone. And I think this is a really good educational tool, and it brings the community on board with us, and they understand some of our budgetary constraints. Thank you.
Any speakers against, councillors? Any questions or comments? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.1.2, which is asking us to proceed with the various local law amendments. Councillor Boglari, are you happy to move that?
I'm happy to move that one.
Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
No, I've read through it all. It's now going out to public consultation. A few things are a bit questionable. I think just on the wording, that was all, and officers are working on clearing that up, and I think the community will, it's good for them to have a look as well going forward.
Is the wording you're referring to the consultation time or the...
Or the one about consultation time and
the cats.
The cats, the wording of the cats, that was it, yes.
Okay, all right, thank you. Well, I might just make sure we just get that cleared up for public record so people understand what we're talking about there. Speaker against? No? Any others? Speaker against?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have concerns with the officer's recommendation, particularly in number P, where it says about shopping trolleys and fining people that take shopping trolleys away from centres. That's not going to be a solution. The solution is forcing the shopping centres to put in the same system at Aldi or put locks on the wheels of those trolleys. I think we're enabled now to find people that leave shopping trolleys. And being the councillor for an area that has a major shopping centre, it is a big issue. I no longer have a ute, so I can't pick them up anymore myself, which I have done many, many times. There are numbers on the trolleys to report it to the shopping centres, and yes, they'll pick them up, but who bothers to ring them? Cleveland and Victoria Point and Capalaba are the worst places I've seen them, and I think the recommendation should reflect what we want and implement those systems into those shopping centres.
Speaker four, Councillor Bishop. Yeah, sorry, got two hands.
Yeah, since we're staying informal, I will speak four. Obviously, this is local laws are where our officers with councillors get to tune the sort of laws that we make. And so I think it's very important that we have these. There are certain things that I think are just worth bearing in mind, some of the things that these local laws, which is in addition to a whole package of local laws that we've done a few years ago. This is an ongoing body of work, and it includes things like the provision for having more than two dogs, for how cats are collared and when they may be able to have exemptions, for things like fishing from bridges. So there are things that need to be paid attention to. And one thing I'd like to ask, if I may, we had an email sent yesterday regarding community consultation. And given the complexity and stages involved with the local law making and amending, can I just ask through you, Madam Mayor, to Officer John Oberhart from Governance, just to describe the process of how and when community who may want to have things to say about this because they may be directly or indirectly affected or just want to say things because it's part of their civic right, just when they get that opportunity.
General Manager.
Thank you, Councillor, and through you, Madam Mayor. As we talked about this, the lawmaking process for councils is a very important process and one which is fairly heavily regulated by the state government through the Local Government Act. The process of even amending a local law can take up to 12 months to go through each of the steps that are required. For new local laws, that can be even longer. We are at the very beginning of this local law amendment process. As you can imagine, over time, things change, the community changes, the city changes. We need to amend our local laws. So the first stage is to identify that we need to review them and what those changes are. We are not committing to any of these changes today. We are committing to identifying them as issues, and we will then send them off to our lawyers now for them to have a look at to make sure that the amendments can be drafted in accordance with the drafting standards. Once we have that, we have to examine what are called anti-competitive provisions that might or might not be in those local laws. Part of that process is to prepare a public interest test, and that has a consultation component to it. It then goes off to the state government for what's called a state interest check, and essentially what they are checking is that our laws don't conflict with any of the state laws. So they go through that process, they'll come back to us. Then, and only then, do we really start the formal community consultation process. So those local laws, as amended, being through all those checks, feedback from councillors and feedback from solicitors and feedback from officers, will then form a package that goes out to the community. So what you see today is most likely not likely to be 100% what goes out to the community. The community are then given the opportunity to consult on those local laws, give us their reviews, make submissions. We're then required to examine those submissions and bring another report back to council. If the amendments following community consultation or state interest are significant enough, then it may be a requirement for a further state interest check, and it may be a requirement for further community consultation, depending on how significant those changes are. Then obviously we get a final draft, which comes back to council for adoption, and then that becomes our law. So even, you know, a short process is probably 8 months. Might be a year before this comes back to council. So a lot of community input to be had. And of course, after today, it's public information what we're proposing. People can start preparing submissions now. They could look at it on the web. They could provide feedback to councillors from basically today. Thank you.
Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, thank you very much. That's very thorough and exactly what we'd anticipate. I just think it's important that in terms of Councillor Hewlett's thoughts, that there is room for this to be adjusted and the time is just commencing. When I do my rudimentary maths, and I am no mathematician, I can assure you, it adds up to a minimum of 56 weeks before we finally get back, and it seems like about 35 weeks before we would get to the community consultation phase. I just want to make sure that when we get to that point that the community is alerted and draw their attention to this, because I think it's great work. And thank you very much to the residents who I've been discussing about some of these issues, and hope to continue that conversation going forward to reflect them in the final result. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Hughes, is there a speaker against? No, it's Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Bishop has raised my concern, and I thank you for the answer. I'm very happy with that response.
Oh, thanks, Madam Chair. Through you, and it's to John, just in relation to Councillor Hewlett's statement. Do we have the powers to lobby a shopping centre owner to put some sort of effort into retrieving their own trolleys or limiting their distance? We can't order them. Look, we've got to go for the individual removal.
No, we can't. I might just respond to that, because having been the councillor for Capalaba, which Councillor Hewlett's referred to, is that pretty much our only strength is bringing the parties together and encouraging them to be good citizens. I have to say, in the interest of Capalaba, that they have actually taken the locking systems on board, which has made a huge improvement. And, you know, it was a much bigger issue previously. I think community pressure is really important, not just from us, but from the people in the gallery and in our community that are sick of seeing trolleys dumped out their backyard. It's a corporate responsibility for those shopping centres to act. And it's not actually all that expensive when you talk about the loss of trolleys and creeks and things like that. So I think you've seen there has been a shift. But as far as we can have a local law that requires our officers to be out there waiting for people to jump the boundary of a shopping centre, which is really not cost effective for ratepayers and really doesn't solve the problem, as we've discovered. So I don't know if the General Manager would like to add to that, but that's my personal experience. I think the important point is that the community have an opportunity through this process to make their views known as, should we have a local law or should we not have a local law, and what's our best opportunity to change the behaviour of shopping centres.
Yes, just want to alert particularly the community of North Shore, Rock Island, to subordinate local law 5, the declared regulated parking areas, as the city does change and grow. I think anyone that's travelled to or from Australia is aware of the challenges of transport and parking at Toondah Harbour, around the 1 mile at Stradbroke and around Jonah Street entries. So, and there's no easy way. They're challenging areas. Council doesn't control all the land. There's opportunities moving forward with economic transition strategies and potential developments around Toondah. In the meantime, though, we've got a problem to help solve and try and get our parking correct down there. And this local law, where there's some new regulated parking areas to be declared, might go some way to help us get the balance better down there. So just look forward to working with the community to try and get the numbers right, because just because we've declared a regulated parking area, eventually, if it goes through, doesn't mean we have to, and the exact regulations around those areas is yet to be determined, but it's to help, not to hinder the people getting to and from the island. Thank you.
Councillor Tolte.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Look, I just thought I'd highlight for the community some of the things that are in here. I'm happy to support this to go out to consultation today. There are aspects, because this covers such a broad range of things, that I'm sure all of the councillors will support some and be less enamoured with others. There are some common sense changes in here, and it does require people to read the small print, if you like. For example, subordinate local law 1.12 makes reference to removing an RSPCA guideline. Now, that may seem like a bad thing, but when you actually look into it, you find that there is no RSPCA guideline in relation to that matter, so therefore it's difficult to look at it. So it's a common sense removal of a line in the legislation. There are lots of other interesting things in here to do with footpath, dining, signage. The signage regulation, I'll be very interested to see how that goes through the anti-competition test, and I think that people will want to look closely at that.
And the I'm particularly keen to have the pet laws overhauled. I support the changes that are in here with regard to that. They're sensible and they will support the pet lovers in my community. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? Look, just quickly, I think if I could just comment that these local laws, councils will agree, I'm sure, that really are the bread and butter of what we do. We talk about cats and dogs and signs and dining, so it is an important document for us. It's fair to say that this has been a fairly long journey because we went through the model law process in 2015. Laws are complex, regardless of what level of government you might be dealing with. And our initial attempt to refine them into our model laws and bring them closer to what people can understand is always a challenge. But it's fair to say that they're a little bit more succinct now, and the subordinate laws are much easier for us to actually change with the requirements of our community. So I do encourage the community to do what they can to be informed on these particular laws, because some will impact individuals both positively, and some might agree that it's not so positive. So this is the bread and butter, and it's the opportunity for the community to comment, and we look forward to being able to go through that process effectively and efficiently over the next 12 months. So with that, councillors, if there are no further comments, I'll hand back to Councillor Boglari to sum up if she wishes.
No, I think it's all been said. John Overhart described the process, and I think that's what we've got to just make sure the community's clear on.
So with that, councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. The next item is 11.1.3, and I believe Councillor Edwards, you're happy to move that, and Councillor Hughes, happy to second it. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Yes, item 11.1.3, coroner's report into the death of Stephen Epherson. That's Ethan Stevenson. I move the officer's recommendation with an amendment including advocacy to the state government to require a safety certificate for vehicles being registered as written on the screen there.
It's an amended motion that actually the bottom line there, which as was chatted about, I think, earlier. Yes. So moved.
So moved.
Seconder for that. Thank you. I've got that. Trace, Councillor Hughes, you happy with that amendment? Because you did.
Just one, two, so the three is.
It's still in there.
Sorry, I'm just trying to follow one, two, three, and we've added the sentence. Thank you.
Happy to second that then?
Yes,
thank you.
Absolutely.
You're happy for you to speak to it.
Thank you. I'd like to commence in extending Council's condolences to the family of Ethan Stevenson, who was tragically killed when struck from behind by a four-wheel drive motor vehicle whilst he was either skateboarding or walking along Centre Road, Russell Island. The vehicle was in an unroadworthy condition, driven at speed by an intoxicated driver. An inquest into the death of Ethan was held in December 2016, and the findings were delivered by the coroner in July 2017. The findings of the inquest made a number of recommendations, some of which are directed towards council. The recommendations are related to Island Road speed limits, street lighting and shared pathways. The officer's recommendations include a review and assessment of these issues. In addition, council will write to relevant state departments referred to in the coroner's report, seeking their responses and proposed actions. Whilst not included in the report, councillors are concerned that motor vehicles can be registered on the islands without having a safety certificate. The coroner wrote at length regarding the absence of a form footpath on the road linking the north to the south end of the island, and noted council's actions since to build a shared footpath, which is being used by residents and has reduced the risk of accidents to pedestrians. The coroner has written of the need to extend the footpath to the southern end of the island, as the footpath currently terminates midway at Stradbroke Drive. I'd like to see this infrastructure form part of next year's budget discussions. For public interest, I'd like to mention just a couple of the recommendations that don't relate to council, but we will advocate for. The coroner has recommended that the Island Police number be doubled from 2 to 4, that the Island Police vehicles carry and operate mobile radar, and the state implement some changes to alcohol and drug testing procedures. The coroner also recommends that the Department of Transport and Main Roads introduce an island bus service under TransLink and take the lead on an island road safety campaign. Council will advocate for these changes. This has been a tragic event, and the coroner's report is reflective of actions that should be considered by a number of stakeholders to improve pedestrian safety. Councillors, I seek your support in voting in favour of the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Are there any speakers against? Any some comments? Councillor Hughes and then Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Edwards. Heartfelt words, and I did not know Ethan nor his family, but reading the coroner's report and the officer's report, I also extend my condolences to Ethan's family and also the community, and support wholeheartedly the recommendations and Councillor Edwards' report.
Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. Yes, indeed, condolences to many, not just the family, but many who were affected. And it certainly has brought a lot of people together, and not the least of which is through the body of this robust report. My question through you, Madam Mayor, and possibly to officers, but also to councillors, just asking, is it enough for us to note our concerns that vehicles can be registered? Can we request that safety certificates are mandated? Because I understand at the moment that they are not required in transfer of vehicles, which is an anomaly across the rest of Queensland. And I wonder whether we should actually say we request that that be addressed. I know it's a state guideline, and I know we can't instruct them, but...
Councillor, I will further write
thank you.
Requesting that. I think that to say it's a concern, we'll... The wording in the letter will ask for that to happen.
Yeah, I just think on behalf of the residents, and we do, you know, as Councillor Edwards certainly would attest, are very interested in their best interests, and the car being not roadworthy, the state of the driver is unforgivable, but the state of roadworthiness is not being required is something that if we can, I think we should look at. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, it's been a long history of vehicles not being requiring roadworthy certificates or safety certificates on the island, but there's a simple thing the community can do is you can download an app onto your phone, which is free, and you can tell whether a vehicle parked in the council car park is registered or unregistered. I know that's not the safety certificate, but every time I go over to Coochie, I just go through the car park when I've got a few minutes, and I can pick up unregistered vehicles and I raise a CR. If we train the community to start downloading this app and reporting it to council, we can address these issues in the car parks. There's a lot of unregistered vehicles all over those islands. And people don't seem to realise if they hurt someone in that vehicle, they're not covered under their public liability, their personal liability. So it's a really big issue, that, and the islands seem to have been avoiding the police interest in those matters, and I think it's time to step it up. Thank you.
Any other comments? Councillor, just to make sure that you're aware that on the day that I received the coroner's report, that I penned a letter to the Premier and copied in the relevant ministers to start advocating for the very things that we're talking about. For those of councillors that were here when this tragic event occurred, and we heard from a friend of Ethan, we absolutely felt the pain that that family was going through. And unfortunately, there's not all of these things don't lie in our realm of responsibility, but certainly as Mayor and representing all the councillors here, we made sure that those issues were raised as soon as this was received. So the only thing that I will need to follow up on now is the extra element of roadworthiness, which I'm sure will leave my office as soon as we pen that letter. So, like I said, condolences also to the family. It was a terrible time for all involved, and certainly no one wants to be, you know, have those sorts of things happen on their watch. All we can do is try to make the world better as a result of that. I'll hand back to Councillor Edwards if he would like to sum up.
Nothing further to add, thanks.
So with that, councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Next item is 11.1.4, the Federal Court Native Title Claim, and I will ask Councillor Bishop, you would like to move that? Seconded by Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it? Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, I'll just move the motion first, which is the federal... Federal Court Native Title Claim QUD 125 2017 with the officer's recommendation that council resolves to join as a party to the Quandamooka Coast Court Claim and the General Manager of Organisational Services arrange regular updates.
Can we amend those words?
Yeah, it says to arrange regularly updates, which could be grammatically correct. Service arrange regularly updates on the progress of the claim to council. So I think it actually does make sense for it to be arranged regularly. Yes. Grammar notwithstanding, I move the motion.
Thank you, councillors. I think as long as the officers understand, we can have the grammar lesson after the meeting, but we understand the intent. The officers are very clear on it, and apologise if it's caused any confusion to you. But he's moved and seconded, councillor, so you can speak to it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And in doing so, I acknowledge that we are custodians of those who are custodians of a culture that we can only stand on the edge of and look back at the history of 21,000 years of a connection to a place. And I suppose I represent our fellow councillors in supporting many years of collaboration with the Quandamooka people as they've sought native title determination over their cultural land. And I think we all stand in support of whatever the road forward is. And there's a great document attached from Redland City Council on the back, the final page of this, which describes the native title and Quandamooka Coast claim. For those who want to get a short version, I just want to acknowledge the work that our officers do and have done for many years in association with the elders on the island. And of particular note, I'd just like to acknowledge the work of Aunty Evelyn Parkin and also Robert Anderson being the elders who moved this into the native title courts. And I wish them, and I'm sure we all do, officers and councillors, the best with learning as much about this place that means so much to them as possible. Thank you.
Any other speakers, councillors? Councillor Mitchell, comment?
Yes, can I only join with Paul in reiterating those words. It is, the report just summarised the process and council's endorsement to join the court proceeding. It's a very important process, and and RCC most certainly needs to be involved. Also continues the legal and ethical cooperation and the ongoing partnership we do have with Quandamooka people. It's framed in our Iliwa, but I think it goes beyond that. We'd also urge the public to keep up to date, and the document that Councillor Bishop alludes to is also available on the council website. So if you just go to our website, Quandamooka Coast, and you can download those that document and have a good look at where we're up to date. So one important fact for the public, just one fun fact, private freehold land cannot be included in any claim. So please stay up to date with the facts. It's going to be a great process ahead, and encourage us all to be involved. Thank you.
Any other comments? I think I just might respond to what might be a question in the community when this is publicly available, as to why part of the city is not included. I think that question was raised with me yesterday by councillors. To the information given to me by Cameron Costello, the CEO of Kayak, is that there is a process within the process, and the clans and mobs get together and they work out, they make sure they understand what the issues are before they proceed down this very, very cumbersome legislative process, which can take years. And so, in fact, this has been staged, and we would expect that in future years that we'll see other parts of Redlands also have that claim placed on them. So it's not just by a fact of drawing a line. There's a lot of work that they internally have to work through, and so that's why you will only see part of Redlands covered, and I'm pretty sure that will be of interest to the community as they see this proceed. With that, hand back to you, Councillor Bishop, if you need to sum up.
Thank you. There is a map that describes the land in question. I think that's important. And all the very best to those who have got a lot of work to do and to officers, because it's an extraordinary thing to be the only city close to a metropolis in the world that has such connection, authentic connection to an ancient culture, the oldest known to man and women, humanity, right here in Redlands City. I wish all the best to everyone involved with the road forward. Thank you.
Put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you. Moving on to our community and customer services items, councillors, 11.2.1, decisions made under delegated authority. Councillor Bishop, you happy to move that?
Yes, this is decisions made under delegated authorities for Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications.
Seconder, thanks. Councillor Edwards, speak to it, Councillor Bishop.
Madam Mayor, these are items which have been delegated to officers to proceed with and follow up. I just like to give an update, if I may, to residents who have expressed interest and many of whom have made submissions previously in relation to a property that is at 24 Alma Street. There are many residents who expressed their views at what was previously an application for 12 units that was approved for 8 units. The residents of the area were of the view that what was ideal in that space was domestic dwellings, housing lots, and I've been contacted by a couple of developers, and one of whom has proceeded with what is now an application for reconfiguration, 1 into 5 house lots. So I just think it's important to reflect back to the community. Officers have agreed that that is under delegated authority, so a good result for residents there, just to keep the theme in that area the way they had intended. Thanks to those developers. Thanks.
Any other comments, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.2.2. Councillor Tolte, I think you're moving that one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I call councillors' attention to item 11.2.2, Planning and Environment Court Matters, as of the 20th of September 2017, and ask that these be noted.
Thank you. Seconder, Councillor Hughes. Want to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's in the report.
Any other questions or comments, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.2.3, Councillor Hewlett, I believe you're moving that one. It's the MCU 1307623939 Bunker Road. You've got and you have an amended motion. You have an alternative motion.
I'd like to propose the motion been provided to councillors last night and this morning in hard copy.
So Councillor Tolte is moving the alternative motion, which is on the board. And we have a second to Councillor Hewlett. Councillor Tolte, would you like to speak to the alternative motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Councillors, we have had a speaker from the public gallery this morning addressing this particular item. In a quick summing up, we have within the planning scheme requirements for health practices, such as a dental practice, to sit in the commercial retail zone. But we also have an understanding through planning instruments that sometimes planning instruments don't keep up with change. In an age of digital disruption and fast-moving economic developments, there is room within the Australian standard for planning to allow flexibility within planning instruments. And we sit here today as the planning committee, as well as the general assembly of council, and that's what we're doing today in relation to this particular matter. Officers have, within the planning instrument, had to assess the application as it's made and under the planning instrument as it's available to them, and they have not been able to find grounds for approval for this particular
proposal. However, I am providing the grounds and the conditions that this can be approved by council in order to provide an overriding public and community service for ageing and disabled members of our community. Under the standard, there are 5 dot points that are a test for us to be able to consider whether we use that power. Those dot points are if the relevant instrument is out of date due to its age or changing circumstances in the area, and the proposal reflects or responds to these changing circumstances. Now, I believe that this proposal does reflect changing circumstances in the demographic of our community. Relevant instrument is incorrect in terms of its substance or underlying assumptions for the circumstances of the particular proposal. I believe the underlying assumptions in the planning scheme don't make allowance for the particular specialty of practice that's been proposed. The relevant instrument inadequately addresses the type of development proposed, and again, I believe that we tick that box, that we cannot adequately address this type of development through the current planning instrument. That relevant instrument does not anticipate the type of development proposed. It's not anticipated in the planning scheme because it is a specialty that is developing because of our ageing demographic, and I'll speak more to that shortly. And there is an exceptional and urgent need for the proposal. Now, when we look at this, it may seem exceptional to us because it's probably not something as lay people that we've thought about, but as we heard from the practitioner this morning, he's been working in this area of specialty for 14 years and it's developed over a long time as a need within our community. So, councillors, in support of this alternate motion for item 11.2.3, which is a proposal for a specialist dental practice at 39 Bunker Road that will cater for geriatric and infirm patients with disabilities and special complex care needs, as a subordinate practice to the practice in the Victoria Point Shopping Centre, there are sufficient grounds in regards to this matter to support overriding the conflict with the planning scheme in support of the exceptional need for proposed service within the community. The planning instrument allows us to make allowances where the relevant instrument does not anticipate the type of development proposed. And our planning instrument does not allow us to recognise the difference between a specialist care practice as is proposed, which is a relatively new area of special interest in dental care. As we heard this morning, there are only 2 such practices in Greater Brisbane. It only allows us to consider all dental practices as being the same and therefore required to be in the commercial zone. This is a new area of specialty care within dental practice that provides a unique service for geriatric and disabled patients with complex medical management needs. This area of service, as you'll see from the peer-reviewed journal articles that have been provided, has developed as a result of our ageing population and changing approaches to dental care. It is now more common for geriatric patients, including those with special care needs such as dementia and limited mobility, to need dental care. Meeting these needs in a dignified and physically accessible way is problematic and has not been anticipated within the planning scheme and therefore has been inadequately addressed by assumptions that require all such services to be situated in the centre zone. Our current planning scheme inadequately addresses this type of development, causing difficulty in terms of the ability of the instrument to recognise the difference between the proposed special care practice and a regular dental practice that would be expected to be situated within the centre zone. The scheme does not allow officers to make exemption or allowance for the difference in patient needs or the human aspects of this patient demographic and the ways in which the centre zone fails to provide them safe, dignified access to their dental care. I believe that dot points 2, 3, and 4 that I read through previously are applicable to this application and that councillors should provide an approval in support of the exceptional need of the aged and patients with special and complex needs for dental treatment and that these matters warrant overcoming the conflict in the zone and that there is an exceptional need for the proposal within our local community. The statements provided by the practitioner and the conditions relevant to those statements that provide that the proposed new practice will function as a secondary practice to the main practice situated in the commercial centre zone will serve to ensure that the proposed practice functions to provide that service for geriatric, disabled and complex care patients, while able-bodied patients will be serviced in the centre zone through the regular practice as intended through the scheme. And this has been conditioned in the motion that's before you. Relevant instrument... Oh, sorry, I've just read that part. So, councillors, with that, I'd put to you that I ask you to support this motion and support the provision of this special care service for our aged and infirm residents throughout the local vicinity of Thornlands, Redland Bay and Victoria Point. Thank you. Speaker against? Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, I'm sympathetic that what's happening, but the scheme is the scheme. And it fails the test, and Councillor Telty's outlined that. But certainly, can I say, we say in our new scheme, and I think I'll try and get this right, we say what we mean and we mean what we say. Is that correct? The Mayor's advocated that a lot. This actually in the new scheme is tighter. So... That's what the scheme's for. My residents have banged on for years. They want more certainty in our planning application. We're saying that. In our specific outcomes and all sorts of things, we've tightened that up in our new scheme. So I can't support this because it doesn't tick the boxes. And particularly in even, and I'll give you the example, the proposal fails, this is the officer's words, not mine, therefore fails both location and scale test under the specific outcome. And that's the thing. It's in the specific outcome. And you can't have it both ways. And schemes can't be that flexible for everything. So the next guy comes along, we've got one on the corner, two spare blocks, this development, a couple of spare blocks, another development. Watch this space. Somebody else will come along and want this and it'll get, and suddenly we've got a strip development. Then we'll have an application for review of the scheme. It'll be a local centre. We've now created a rod for our own back and all sorts of things. Simply on the specific outcomes, this is what the scheme says. I'm sticking with the scheme. Because when you go to court, and I've seen it over the years, you go to court, if you're a counsel that goes here and goes there, you don't have any cred whatsoever. You stick to the scheme. If you want to change the scheme, we haven't changed the scheme. We've actually tightened it up. I can't support it, I'm sorry, mate.
Speaker 4. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And I'd like to acknowledge Councillor Telty's help during this application because I was involved with it as well and I appreciate her comments. In reference to my learned colleague, Councillor Elliott, I believe I've been in the room when he's actually supported things that conflicted with the planning scheme, but we shall dwell on those moments, shall we? this is a really good thing for the area. It's on a half-acre lot. It's a low-key, low-impact dental surgery. When I grew up in Holland Park, Mount Gravatt area, I recall doctors' surgeries littered along Logan Road at Holland Park because doctors were setting up in residential properties. Victoria Point is a massively growing area. My area, my division alone, has 5 retirement villages and 2 high care facilities. What this doctor is offering is something that the area really needs. You go into the medical centres down there with the doctor's surgery, they're continually crowded. And I know there's another dentist in the area, one or two, but we need more of these sort of services in Victoria Point. It's a major centre, it's growing, it's burgeoning, and it really needs this. Even with this ageing, this new policy for governments for staying in aged care in home and getting help from home, we have the wonderful people at Star Transport that transport these people to these facilities. Having that ability to get out of your car in a disabled area, be able to get to the front door without... Any complications is a wonderful thing. And to support something like this, the neighbours support it. I don't even know why we've specified a 2-metre acoustic barrier because I don't think there's going to be any much noise generated at all. I fully support it and I think it would be a real loss for the suburb and for the area if we didn't. Thank you.
Speaker against? Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I need to first of all declare... potential perceived conflict of interest, as I have a brother who is a dentist, now retired from dentistry. But I also just want to note that the applicant in the room has done an incredible service to our community, which is questioned, and the fact that it's part of an emerging need leads me, and I'm sure all of us, to the acknowledgement that there's something that's not happening in our city, and the last thing we would want to do is prevent something like that. The question for me is about where. When something like this is being planned for, it's really important that it is done in the right place, in the right way, and at the right time. I asked yesterday for the officers to give us an indication whether one of the concerns that's raised in this report is regarding ribbon development, which is effectively extending beyond an identified place where there is currently commercial development allowed, and this is beyond that. I asked whether there was any other need identified in our current plan or in our proposed changes to address this in this area, and the suggestion was no. I suppose I'm concerned that this would lead to exactly what Councillor Elliott did touch on a moment ago, which is that potentially other allied health people may wish to move into that area. If we establish this now, there's no real grounds that we would have. At the moment, we have got a planning scheme to say that they should not come into that area, and that would then change the character. And we heard before about co-housing, some of the impacts upon residents. My concern is not with this particular development or the applicant or the reason. It's the fact that it would start a precedent, and that's the concern for me. And I just would like to encourage anyone who is looking down this path, and I can see that the applicant is a good-hearted man who's devoted an enormous amount of time and energy into trying to find a solution, to please come and talk to our officers early. They're very open to discussion, to look at how something could be discovered that would be appropriate. My view is that in this instance, it's great that you've tried to do everything right, but talking with our officers early to see whether it might be in conflict is a very important part. The fact that it could create a precedent, I think, is what's reflected in, by the officers, and I acknowledge the great work that Councillor Tulte has done as an advocate. I'm sure we all want to advocate and allow these people to be treated. If the AMA has identified, or the Australian Dental Association has identified, that this is a growing need, I don't think commercially there'll be limited opportunities. I empathise with the time and energy and funds put into this particular application, and I do hope that we can find somewhere that suits you, that isn't going to have the potential impacts. So that's my justification for not supporting this at this time.
Speaker 4, Councillor Boglari.
I'm speaking for this one. On page 39, it talks about specific outcomes that state that non-residential uses such as medical facilities may be contemplated in appropriate locations and subject to detailed development requirements, including, and then it's got the list A, B, C, D and E. When you go through them, I won't read them out, to me they actually tick all of them. And with the new conditions that are put into this new motion, I'm more than satisfied. For myself, yes, you look at your planning scheme, but I also ask myself, is there a need before you even bother looking at it? And yes, there is a need. I've had an elderly mother who I had to take to the dentist while she was barely able to walk and on oxygen. And I remember 6 years ago having to bring her down to Cleveland, and what a traumatic day that was for me with Mum falling over. She was so upset by the time she got to the dentist with grazed knees. And by the time we got home, I had to call the doctor to her because of the stress she went through. So there is a need, and it's a growing need in Redlands, and we all know that. Is there an impact on the neighbours? Well, far as I have been informed, the neighbours are happy with it. It's not a mechanic shop or a brewery or anything that's going to emit odours. It has no impact on the neighbours. And they've agreed. And is it overdevelopment of the site? No, it's not. It's a very large block, and it has got that ticked and flicked in the report as well. We have to look at our planning scheme, perhaps, so that the needs of the growing needs in our community are actually addressed. And with this one, I support them, and well done to the applicants for seeing that need and perhaps going that little extra mile that other businesses don't go to help us with our lesser ability residents in Redlands.
Speaker against? Comment, Councillor Edwards?
Thank you. Look, I fully sympathise with the position that Councillor Elliott expressed about we need clarity in our planning scheme and we need to try and stick by that wherever we can. And that's a tenet that we must strive to achieve. With this particular one, for my personal assessment of it, is there are a few grey areas. And I probably look at the one of the sufficient grounds was there is an exceptional urgent need for the proposal. So what I've done is I've stepped back and I've looked at the outcome. Is the outcome of this, what is the greatest benefit? Is it the greatest benefit by not having it there because it's not on a corner location, or is the greatest benefit to the residents in that area and providing a specialist service? And for me, I think the outcome in this case, the benefit, outweighs some issues that was relied upon to decline, to recommend a decline of this application. So based on the benefits to the residents and the nature of the service, I'm going to support it.
Thank you, councillors. Any other comments? Councillor Mitchell, and then Councillor Golay.
Yes, I think on a case-by-case basis, our community does want us and does trust us to look at things as humans, not just as bureaucrats. There's certainly technical reasons that we could look at to deny this particular application. But as you just take off your bureaucratic hat and you look at it from an outcome, there's nothing but good in this proposal. As a medical profession, as a family man, I can just see this is well intended. The outcome is good. The research that's been put into it shows us that the community wants it. So if there's only technical reasons to find a way to deny it, and we have the opportunity because of need to be more flexible, then I'm certainly going to be supporting this and being flexible based on the needs in our community and the wonderful service that this will provide to some of the most vulnerable in our community. Thanks.
Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Just a comment and a question, if I may. So I'll start with the question. I'm just looking at the conditions of signage. Why wouldn't we allow the practice, unless this is a standard procedure here, why wouldn't we allow the practice to actually advertise its specialty service?
I can answer that if you like.
You're referring to the conditions that have been put forward in the alternative
motion.
Yeah,
so it says, if I refer back to number four, it talks about geriatric and disabled patients, so why wouldn't you allow them to advertise that?
I'll get Councillor Tolte to respond, and I also think that's as a part of the discussion that was had yesterday, if I'm correct.
Yes, so one of the concerns raised yesterday from a planning prospect was the need to ensure that this practice is a subordinate practice to the main practice in the shopping centre, and how that would be best managed from a public perspective. There's a letter in your pack, Councillor, written by Dr. Prashant Raniger. And if I can, so to the Redlands Council, I'll be running my 39 Bunker Road clinic as a specialist clinic where patients requiring special care will get triaged by myself either at the nursing home or at the surgery. The Bunker Road practice having a separate phone number that is not publicly advertised but is provided only to special care providers and care service managers who manage the transport and care of patients with special needs, such as practice managers and care managers in nursing homes. The contact number for the centre practice will be the number advertised for the access of general public and as a main point of contact for the joint practices. The patient records will be available in a shared database that will enable the aged age and care requirements of patients to be assessed when an appointment is made. Only patients who require special care service for geriatric disabled patients will be booked to attend the Bunker Road practice. Younger and able-bodied patients will be booked to attend the treatment rooms in the Victoria Point Shopping Centre practice. Signage at the front of the practice in Bunker Road will note that patients should contact the other practice for general dental care, and will note that the Bunker Road practice is Ranniger Dental Care Special Care Practice for patients with special needs geriatric care. And that has been volunteered by the practitioner in order to satisfy the concerns of some of the counsellors, and then that has resulted in the condition that has been put there today.
Thank you. And I suppose just a comment would be that knowing the site and where it's actually situated within a commercial area, again, I wouldn't sort of say it's going to be like a mechanic shop or something setting up in a residential area. So I don't see any issue with it. That's right. It is near a commercial centre.
It's near a commercial area.
So I don't see any dramas with it. I'm happy to support it, so long as they stick to the conditions that have been instigated.
Well, I think everyone's had a natter, so it's my turn. Just quickly, I think, responding to some of the comments around the room. Firstly, every application is assessed on its merits. It doesn't actually create precedence for other decisions, and that's been mentioned in here before. We talk about the scheme. The scheme is a scheme, you're right. It's a performance-based plan, and I've got to say that makes it very difficult sometimes explaining that to a community, but this is one of the reasons why it is performance-based. You can't anticipate some of the future uses as the world changes very quickly with innovation, and that flexibility allows us to assess each of those particular applications on their merit and potentially fill a need that the community currently has. I would suggest in 2006, when our scheme was the scheme this is being assessed under was around, that we weren't thinking about having one of two practices that dealt specifically with our aged care and our infirm in the area of dentistry. We couldn't anticipate that, and hence this is one of the values, although sometimes I would argue there's not too many values in having a performance-based scheme, but mainly because of the complexity, that this is one of the values of having that. And the officers are absolutely on the ball with their assessment and their recommendation. Our job as councillors is to see beyond the technical elements of it and to, assess whether, in fact, with the ageing community that we have, and let's face it, we have the fastest ageing community in the region, and it's an area of innovation that we are trying to encourage through our economic development. And I think in this instance, the applicant has actually been very innovative in his approach. And I would like to support people in our community to be innovative, not only to improve the economic development opportunities of our city, but create jobs, particularly in an area that we, are doing very well in, that's the aged care sector. So I thank the officers for their assessment, and listening to the comments around the room, this is the right place and the right time, because, as has been very well articulated by not only the applicant, but by some of the people speaking to this application today. Allied health will be a growth industry in our city. We've identified that. We've just, I think, last meeting, if I'm correct, you endorsed a health and social services action plan. All of these things will be a growth sector of employment and industry in our city, and the last thing I would like to do is to discourage that. I do want to actually, however, say that we have got planning tools in place, and we would encourage people who want to play in this space for our city to get that good advice up front so that you can actually comply with the scheme and get a very easy tick and flick through the system. But in this instance, it's a very unique service that's being provided, and grateful that we have that service available to our residents here in Redlands. So with that, it certainly has my support, and I'm going to hand back to Councillor Tolte, but just with a reminder, Councillor Tolte, that you may want to table your notes there as a reason for overturning the officer's recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Happy to table all the documents that have been provided to councillors. I believe they've all been provided to the officers as well.
Just to be clear, you have provided an alternative motion. It is a requirement for you to provide reasons why you've actually moved an alternative motion. So you have got a fairly lengthy spiel there that you might want to have tabled and noted with the agenda, with the minutes.
Do I have to formally note that, Madam, that I table my statements today?
I would suggest that would be way forward to meet the requirements.
I'll ask that my statements today be tabled formally as the reasons why we have proposed this motion. In response to some of the comments that have been made, Councillor Elliott noted that it fails both location and scale test. It does fail within the planning scheme, the location test, only because it would be required to be on a corner block and it's the third block away from a corner. However, it did not fail the scale test. Officers have said that the scale and the impact in the scale is acceptable and is no problem. Councillor Bishop noted his concern, as did Councillor Elliott, with regard to ribbon development. The fact that this is a subordinate branch practice to the main practice, which is less than 400 metres away in the commercial centre, I think goes a long way to allaying that concern. I don't believe that this will cause ribbon development. However, there are already other practices that have kind of sprung up in that area, irrelevant to this. I thank Councillor Boglari for her personal account of her experiences with trying to get her poor mum to the dentist. That's very heartfelt, and I'm sorry you went through that. But I think that's why we're supporting this today in a different time. Someone in Councillor Boglari's situation would be able to take her up to the front door in a dignified way, and she would not be distressed trying to get through a commercial centre with people looking at her with her oxygen tanks. And a lot of the time these patients will be confused through dementia. They will be people that rarely leave their nursing home or their room, and therefore they are already put out or fearful of leaving their regular environment. And those are the people that perhaps are a little more able-bodied. And the scale of patients that are being referred to this clinic are also patients who are perhaps chair-bound, who don't actually get out of a armchair or a bed. They are unable to move themselves at all, and they don't use a regular wheelchair. So these are people who are going to be transported perhaps in the back of a large van. That van doesn't necessarily fit into a regular disabled car space in a commercial shopping centre. And if once unloaded from that van, they have to be wheeled through a commercial shopping centre in full view of all of the shoppers to get to that essential equipment that's in the surgery. In this instance, they will be able to pull up in the privacy of what is essentially a yard, and they will have full access, and they'll be taken into a converted house, so it'll be a homely, comforting environment, which is what the doctor is trying to achieve for them, and it will be far less confronting for them. So with that, I thank the councillors and I hope that they will support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. With that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Redwoods, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Elliott, Councillor Bishop. Thank you, councillors. Okay, the next item is the library strategy, 11.2.4, and I believe, just lost my place here. Councillor Boglari, you're moving that, and seconded by Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Yes, it's long awaited. The library strategy is another service that Council provides for our community, and it has a growing need on it. It helps build our social interactions between different age groups, and on page 50 you can see the new library strategy's four strategic goals: welcoming destinations and flexible spaces. It's not just where people go anymore just to look up some work that they need to do. There are so many more services available. Innovative and accessible services. The innovation, being able to read books on internet and things like that, things which we didn't even know existed when, I was a child. Activate and engage through programs and partnerships. There's a lot of groups that also meet in our libraries now. We have the Genealogical Society and other groups meeting, I know, over just in the Cleveland Library, and I know both the Capalabar and the Victoria Point Library also have different groups that engage there. And a skilled and cohesive team. Being a librarian, you have to know a little bit more than what you're used to, and we have historians and other skills now over there to help people when they come to get their internet. We also still have the mobile library, which is well used in various destinations across the city, and I would just totally support this because I know how much my community love the mobile library and how many people. Just recently I had yet another email when we tried the Sunday opening and how a grandparent had children over on a wet, rainy day and he brought them down to Cleveland Library and he survived the day, he said. And he sent me an email to thank me for the amount of activities that were on at the library that day. His grandchildren were totally entertained. So I thank the library team for their amount of effort as well that has gone into this and bringing us forward. Keeping up with technology in our libraries is no doubt no easy task.
Speaker against, councillors? No, there being none. I think it's just really important to note the one item in the policy document which will be important for all areas of council is that we try to maximise the assets that we have and be innovative in how we use them, and as our needs change as a community, that we also allow our organisation to meet those needs through that flexibility. And point 10 of the policy document outlines that very succinctly. So this is just a policy document that we're talking about here, and that we're not actually going down into the detail. Just to be clear, it's a strategy, it's a policy, and there'll be further discussions on how we meet our community's needs through those policies and strategies. Sorry, Councillor Bishop, I didn't see you.
Yeah, it's just a comment to acknowledge the incredible collaborations that happen through our libraries with many of the local schools and just the incredible work that happens, the gallery up in Capalabar as well. And I think those partnerships are a very important aspect of this going forward, and it's the bit of council that the community loves the most. It's a free service. There are free downloadable books, and with the digital revolution and access to knowledge, and I notice improving the range and quality of information resources and tools was one of the previous action items from the 10-year plan 2007. I think that's very clearly been demonstrated. One thing that I just note in the previous 10-year action plan, which is strengthen local democracy, foster a just and inclusive community, I think those things are embedded in this plan going forward, and if they're not, they certainly should and must be. As my school motto, which I keep referring to, scientia est potestas, knowledge is power, a place where people come together freely. This is a civic gathering place. If you go to shopping malls and hang out, you're in a commercial space and ideas aren't necessarily liberally free, and you can't necessarily just express yourself there. And while you need to be quiet in a library, there are places where strengthening local democracy is important. They're gathering places for our community, and so I totally support this library services strategy and the outreach of the bus, and look forward to finding ways to make best use of that existing bus and trying to make it last as long as we can, because it hasn't had a huge life, and I know the officers are looking at seeing if they can continue that and manage the costs associated. And there are budget issues that we need to consider down the track, but great report. Thanks, officers.
If there are no further comments, any summing up required? Councillor Boglary?
No, just once again, thank you to the officers for the amount of work they do in that area.
Thank you. Put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillors, item 11.2.5 is the Local Government Infrastructure Plan. We have Councillor Mitchell, I believe. Councillor Mitchell, happy to move that item. Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Seconded by Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, please, Madam Mayor. Thank you. The purpose of this report is to seek Council's endorsement of the post-consultation draft of the LGIP, of the Local Government Infrastructure Plan, so it can be sent on to the Minister for approval for the draft LGIP. The LGIP forms part 4 of the planning scheme and it ensures, or hopes to ensure, higher order infrastructure is planned and provided in an efficient way to meet the city plan's strategic growth outcomes and encourage urban development where adequate infrastructure exists or can be provided. Importantly, it's the basis on which developer contributions are collected towards this trunk infrastructure. It tries to plan well over an 11-year horizon, this one to 2027, and can be amended every 5 years or earlier. Also, very importantly, this document tries to align with the asset service management plans, our capital expenditure plans, and our long-term financial forecasts. There's a lot of work being done. This is incredibly complex. It will be a movable feast as the city matures, and in some ways it needs to look back and forward. So pretty tough stuff, but a lot of great work being done. Importantly, moving forward, it's the process that I think we're all interested in, that we're looking at this with based on science and skill and equity across the city and based on needs. To me, it's too important to let stall. There'll be things that we all find that are imperfect within it, but a lot of great work being done, and we need to keep moving forward so that we can pay for the infrastructure that our city needs. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Mitchell. Any speakers against? Councillor Boglari.
Thank you, Mayor Williams. I'm not supporting the LGIP today because I'm not totally satisfied in the order that some of the park and infrastructure projects have been placed in it. It is important to have an LGIP so that our infrastructure reserve, we've got $90 million in it, and that has been collected over a number of years, is spent. But I have been going on for years saying that with consolidated, as it's now called, infill in the northern part of our city, that a fair share does not seem to come back to that northern part of the city. It seems to go where the larger subdivisions are down south. So as an example, though I am not being divisional, I am talking about the whole city and in particular the equity of, about it. But knowing my own patch, I'll use my examples. I have got two parks in my area which have had subdivisions built. People moved in since 2008, and yet both of them haven't had any infrastructure put in them. So now when I look into the LGIP to see when it might be coming up into the, because this feeds then into our capital works project each year, they're not coming up until 2026 and 2027. So I can't accept that, and I know there are other examples in other northern suburbs as well. Now, to get the process into here, I know growth is taken into account, but from what I am gathering, and I have had at least five meetings with officers since I first got this draft to get clarity on this, it's all about growth, but it seems to be growth from now. The growth over the last 10 years, which has been huge with the infill in certain areas, doesn't seem to have been taken into account. There seems to be this gap there. And based on that, and based on the fact that I haven't been able to get the clarity that I have sought over the last few weeks, I just can't vote on that because I'm not sure about the integrity of the actual... all the documents, all the projects have come up. I don't think the projects have changed. I do think there could be a variance in the timeframes of some of them, and I just need to be assured of that process and how it all happened. And at this stage, I can't vote for it because I haven't got that certainty.
Speaker 4. Speaker 4, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We need to have the LGIP in place, and I share Councillor Boglari's concerns, and I can assure her that they are not concerns just in the north of the city. I have many new housing developments down in Redland Bay where infrastructure money was collected more than 10 years ago, and the promised infrastructure is either just coming online now or
has not come online yet. And the same arguments are made in the south of the city that the money is collected, put into the pool, and, you know, we don't see the improvements come through in a timely manner. So while I share those concerns, we need to go through this process, and we do need an LGIP in place in order to be able to charge infrastructure charges at all. So we have to get it through. I have things that I will be arguing for in the way this is ordered. But at this point in time, this needs to move through now, and then we need to argue the finer details as we move forward.
Speaker against. Speaker against, Councillor.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and to the officers, thank you for an extraordinarily robust and comprehensive body of work, which I don't question in any way, except for the timing of the proposed provision of some of these, well, hundreds of millions of dollars. Some of my concerns are not with the fact that we have to have an LGIP. I think it's tremendous that we are able to be supported, not to the degree that we need to, with developer contributions. The way they are collected across this city is very important, and this plan helps that. The way they're allocated is also defined by this document. So when we were discussing yesterday, capturing the revenue in order to work out where it's going to be put and spent to deliver the infrastructure, hundreds of millions of dollars of which is for community infrastructure over the life of this plan, needs to be done in accordance with the plan. My concern, as Councillor Boglari has suggested, is it sits with us as councillors to work out what do we expect the standards of service for our community to be. We've recently gone in a car trip to other cities and had a look at some of the infrastructure they have in their parks. What standard do we want? Because if we put in one standard in one place, everyone else across the city has the right to that, you would think, unless there's some anomaly. I don't believe that we are sophisticated enough to be politically at a place where we have clarity about what the standards of service across this city should be. And I also don't believe that we have our regional priorities aligned as councillors to instruct our officers. And the part of this document that I don't support is that there is allocations of hundreds of millions of dollars in certain areas prioritised ahead of other areas. That's the bit that I'm concerned with, and that's where I'm withholding my support. I would like to think, as we had confirmation yesterday, that as we go through the portfolio management office process, that the allocation of those funds is going to be regionally prioritised in an equitable manner, which I know is a recent commitment. But I do believe that the dates of delivery in certain areas needs to be reflected as in the best interests of all the residents or the majority of residents across the entire city. And I do note that there has been a degree of movement outside of the urban footprint over the last few years, and that has, it seems, a reflection that is a similar pattern to the expenditure of some of the earlier funds allocated. What I'm referring to there with your crossed face there, Councillor Williams? Oh, there are many projects that have been identified that are not necessarily ones that have appeared previously that are allocated in this, that are in the we have allocation of funds identified in this document that I am not at all clear as to what the process of them being prioritised above other areas, but I sense a pattern with movement beyond the urban footprint and allocation of funds away from where over dozens of years we've been collecting funds, and I think there is an equitable discussion. We have, as a council, gone on a journey from what was back to basics to a different place now. We don't know yet what that is. What level of standards of service do we want? So I'm suggesting that for officers to be clear about where the allocation of funds is, we need to be clear about what are the standards of service that this city requires. That's a discussion with our community, I would suggest. what are the regional priorities and where should we allocate that money? Certainly seems to be going in certain areas, but I don't think that that's been prioritised in a way that's clear to me, and also the dates of delivery. You're smirking, Madam Mayor. Can I...
I'm chairing the meeting and I'm enjoying what you're speaking about.
I'm glad you're enjoying it, and I look forward to seeing that applied equitably across the city in the best interest of
Morrigyori residents. I'll smile at everyone that speaks today, I promise. Thank you. Look, Speaker 4, Councillor Hewlett, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to start off with a compliment for a change. I just think the officers, particularly under Peter Best's management, have done an absolutely brilliant job with the CapEx and the roads and the parks. I mean, I see them rolling out across the whole city, the roads. I've never seen so many roads being surfaced in my whole life in the city, so brilliant job. I think Peter's taken up that role expertly. I think there's a bit of confusion, and I saw it in the Coastal Adaption Strategy. You can't be perfect with timelines, and I know that causes concern and frustration for all councillors, but some of those upgrades don't refer to renewals. Renewals are a different thing, and I confirm that with the park. So your park may still be getting renewed. You may not get an upgrade. So there's additional stuff to go in there, like a off-leash dog area. That may be an upgrade, whereas a renewal isn't included. So I think we get all angst up. We're all passionate about capital expenditure, all passionate about infrastructure. But I have to say, in the last few years, we've had more infrastructure delivered in the city than I've ever seen, and I want to compliment the officers, so thank you.
Not quite on topic, but we'll let it go. Just back to the.
Have we lobbied the state to remove the cap on infrastructure charge?
Many times.
Oh.
It's part of my rhetoric. Yeah. Speaker against. Comment, Councillor Hughes, or a question?
Yes, comment, question. Thank you, and through you, Mayor, possibly to Peter Best. With the officer's recommendation, understanding that we've been talking a lot about our parks and our roads, and we can all identify our park, and we've all got potential issues that Councillor Boglari has raised, and myself, I'll be taking up one. Point one, adopt the NetServe plan, Part A. Major amendment as revised. And our net server plan, water and waste, following my tour of our facilities the other week, which was really enlightening, I just wanted to touch base with Peter Best, our general manager. With this, Peter, this report that will feed into our LGIP, one of the comments that we here as councillors regularly is all the development that's coming and our water and our sewerage and how can we cope and our water and our sewerage and we don't have enough and our water and our sewerage. It comes up an awful lot with residents. So when we look at this Redland Waste Water NetServe Plan Part A, and this is now going to become a public document, and as residents read this, this is hard going and it's hard to understand some of it. Can you just clarify for us, we've got our pump stations and our plants going forward to our future. This fits into our LGIP. We don't see, or I don't see, that we need too much more major infrastructure on these parts. We've just done Strati. So I'm talking about our mainlands.
So the NetServe plan is a regulatory compliant guidance document that we have to submit. It's reviewed periodically. It takes into account all of the ingredients that come along as development for the city. That's not just residential, that's trade waste, as well as commercial, industrial, and of course residential. We regularly, inside the periodic review periods, my team at Wastewater, Water and Waste Infrastructure, regularly review development applications in conjunction with David Jeans and his group to see whether or not it's an infill or if it's a new development attaching to an existing area, whether or not the water, wastewater assets will be able to handle the capacity that's forecast. Whilst water and wastewater is what I like it to be and where I've worked before, it should be a silent service, right? You flush it, it goes. You turn it on, it comes. Yep. If we're doing our job, although not at the same time, correct, Councillor? We currently review the demand requirements on the city. Shoreline development will present its own challenges, and we are reviewing those at the moment. You cited the wastewater treatment plant that's recently been built and going through the final stages of commissioning this year. That's been built with everyday overcapacity to accommodate future state development on that island over at Point Lookout area, as well as the influx of tourists during peak seasons. We demand cater for those sorts of things. Our network at the moment, the expansion areas will be shoreline. Our network is not, but an expansion area, development area down there is shoreline.
I understand that will be separate.
Yes, I corrected myself. There's an infrastructure agreement with that. That's an area where we have a responsibility to review how that is serviced for water by the council, for wastewater potentially by the developer. Right? Otherwise, we do this all the time. That plan that you have there sets the future, forecasts the future, and it's a document that is required by the state. Okay.
Councillor Elliott.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor. I can see some councillors' concerns on the LGIP, but the reality is you need a charging mechanism to get the money and to spend it. At the end of the day, it's an indicative program. It'll change. Councillor Boglari mentioned in a workshop every three or four years, things will move around. At the end of the day, majority of councils will make a decision where the money is spent. And Councillor, I'm sure after the discussion yesterday, if you bring something to the table, I think it would be sympathetic to the councillors in this room. There's things there, and I think Councillor Telty spoke on it well. I could see Councillor Bishop's concern. Councillor Hewlett sort of wandered off into the reseal program. Exactly right. But certainly, this is the driver of the money, and you have to get it right. This is not dreamed up. This is built on strategies councils have approved over the years and flows into this. However, we know yesterday, not so however, but we also know that this will come back for our prioritisation, I'll say that once, by council. And that's the time where you tick the box, bring the things in, as Councillor Hill, it says in Capital Works Graham, if something is missing, bring it to the table and don't, and then it'll be looked at. And as I said, a majority of council has built it. Can I say on the downside is, the money comes from developments as developers pay their infrastructure charges. On the Bay Islands, we are spending millions and millions of dollars. I forecast, and I'll say to council now, that I will be putting up once again, an infrastructure charge for the Bay Islands to pay for some of that. We're recouping 89% of our costs in our LGIP, and I think over the 10 or 11 year period, and I think that's as good as it gets. It was 50-50. A few years back, less. And it's up to an 89% recoup. So I think that's a good outcome for council. And the gap's what the community has to pay. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? If I could probably just take this opportunity as well, and probably touching on what's already been said, but if every councillor was concerned about the list, we would be left with no mechanism to collect money from infrastructure charges. This has been a topic of great discussion over my time here in council, particularly with the changing legislation and the caps, which was mentioned earlier, I think, by Councillor Hewlett. And we've also heard about the levels of service. Well, it's all very good to increase levels of service, but what happens then is that you actually have to increase your rates if you want to increase the levels of service. And I'm sitting around the room now looking at some of the wish lists that are coming from council, and all good things. At the end of the day, we have to fund that. And the only way you fund that, because you don't get any money from the state in infrastructure, and if I could just put that on record with the election coming up that we'd like our fair share, you're going to be relying on these funds. And the fact that we've been able to look at not only just the LGIP, this new piece of legislation, using information that we've had, bring together our NetServe planning, our LGIP, in line with our city plan, which is it's a really big effort on part of this organisation, which will then flow it through our project management program management office through to our capital plan, which will take out some of what the innuendo I've heard today about, you know, it's very interesting where this list is. Well, this list has come from existing strategies, existing lists, based on demands and the growth of various areas. And as Councillor Elliott eloquently said, is we'll have plenty of time to debate those lists, but the officers are doing the thorough investigation to make sure that prioritisation does in fact represent the greatest need for where this spend should be. So it's come a long way from when we first started talking about the local growth management plan, which saw council ratepayers having to fund a great deal more than what we currently were facing with this LGIP. So I would ask councillors, despite the fact that the list isn't perfect, probably never was perfect, and it probably never will be absolutely perfect for everyone, but the broader principle here is that we are going to get a great deal more infrastructure delivery at the right level of service for our community at the least pain in their pockets. And without this piece of legislation working in our favour, we have nothing. We are exposing our community to funding it all. So if councillors can be patient and work through that list after this great collaboration of a various number of documents, bringing it together to one to make it much easier, much more transparent and much more fair and equitable, which is the words I've heard many times here today, you will absolutely have that opportunity to make sure the whole organisation is on board with delivering this infrastructure. So, not easy. I thank the officers. Giles, it's been a really big effort, and I know you've been head down on a cup for a long time, and as you know, you'll never satisfy every single one of us in here. But at the end of the day, this is about the policy position, councillors, and lining this up with our planning scheme, which hopefully will come back from the state, ready for us to start gathering those infrastructure charges that our ratepayers deserve and the residents who are moving here or already live here are keen for us to see, to deliver. So with that, I'm going to hand back to whoever, Councillor Mitchell, it was a long time ago, to sum up. And if there's no further comments, I'll leave it to you, Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think there's a lot more universal agreement than not. I think it's, I think all of us have spoken of the pride in the process. I think we should be proud of it, and I think Council should be proud of the process that we're going through. We're moving in the right direction. There's never been more information flowing through in a coordinated fashion, so it's all going very well. I think we've all agreed we need some process to collect our fees, our infrastructure charges into the future. No one argues with that. We all share our concerns for the city, and our concerns are for the best outcome for the city. Another unity ticket. We all want to be strategic. Another unity ticket. So it's all going great. We need to keep working hard to align all our policy documents, our capital expenditure, etc. Importantly, we all need to look at those as we move forward in our patient and collaborative discussions, look for any historical inequities and allow ourselves to make those adjustments as the city moves forward. So, yep, not perfect, but in many ways I think there's an enormous amount of unity and shared purpose there, and an acknowledgement that the process has been excellent, and but ongoing improvements can be made. So with that, move the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Just before we move that motion officially, I just wanted to note that we've just added the section the head of power to that motion. It doesn't change the intent, but it just makes it clearer. So we've added the section of the Act, which is the head of power for this decision. So just to be clear, it's just a technical element, but important for the state to receive it as required. All comfortable with that, mover and seconder? So with that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those four are Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Bishop. Thank you. Moving on to item 11.2.6, Councillor Hughes, I believe you're going to move that motion.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move 11.2.6, the draft multiple dwelling design guide. Thank you.
Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Our city plan is, I believe, the biggest document and the biggest commitment that we've will have in this term of council in my first term of council, specifically for our community, and the hours that we've put into our city plan can't be counted. This document is in support of our city plan, and it says it's a draft, so please note that it is a draft, multiple dwelling design guide. It's a 33-page, almost pictorial, with some great points to it. It's a really good document from my point of view. The key aim of the document is to ensure multiple dwelling developments contribute positively to the Redlands character, identity, and one of my favourite words, lifestyle. This is going to public consultation for a period of 4 weeks, so please, to the residents and the community, take note. We welcome your feedback and your contribution to this conversation. Thank you.
Speaker against? Any other comments? Councillor Boglari?
Oh, thank you. I just want to encourage everybody to actually get involved in the public consultation. We've all got various... I'm trying not to actually say one, but we've all got various developments that we hate, absolutely despise parts of, and we don't feel they're up to Redlands standards. So perhaps this is part way there of being able to give a guideline out to developers and say this is what we expect. I was just wondering if an officer can actually explain how this document will be used going forward.
David, are you able to address that question?
Good morning, councillors, and thank you for the question, Councillor Boglari. This design guide has been brought together to really support the planning scheme, so draft city plan. We've really tried to seek good design outcomes, particularly when it comes to architecture and secondary design elements on a site. However, a picture speaks a thousand words, and what we've done is we've put together a guideline to give to our development industry to say the planning scheme is the statutory document and you have to comply with that. This is how we believe you can comply. This is what we see as good development for the city.
So I just want to thank the officers for actually putting it together, because anything that helps get a better outcome, considering some of the development designs that we've had over the past few years, is going to be an awesome result for our community. So thank you, and again, get involved, because this is our chance to actually say what we want built in Redlands in this particular style of development.
Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. Absolutely support the work that the officers have done. They are across the industry and understand this particular part of the world. I think what's very important to acknowledge about this document is it doesn't guarantee any change. It's an advocacy document. It's able to be used by people by choice. And so I'd just like to encourage not just developers to look at these options. Some of them have got costs associated with them, but some of them have got incredible savings. But I'd also like to encourage residents who are considering purchasing properties, be aware of these sorts of design elements, because if you buy a property that has these things factored in, it will save you money, it will save you time, it will mean that you'll be living in a more desirable place, and hopefully you'll be able to be in a community, because these are design guides to encourage the best kind of living. We need to encourage densities, and that's what this is about, multiple dwelling design guide. If you as a purchaser of a property are looking for these sorts of things, you will find the premium developments, and they will probably stand you in good stead, not only while you're living there, but in terms of resale, hopefully you'll have worked with a great developer who's built something that's going to last for a long time, and you'll be saving your money and living in a beautiful place. So it's not something that we are mandating that the industry does, it's by choice. So please be aware of your choices and choose the best options. Thanks.
Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. Yeah, I'd just like to thank the officers, actually initially the councillors at the workshop. I was approached and on a couple of comments I made, and I thought that was taken on board. Also, suggestions of where we saw good development was taken up, and the officers have gone and had a look at it. So very proactive, and I thank them for this.
Councillor Hewlett.
Just a comment, thanks, Madam Mayor. Councillor Golay and I met with probably perhaps the largest builder of multiple dwellings in the city, and his comment was, which I found quite amusing, was he said all this trendy stuff about route lines and kickbacks and all that other specifications. He said people just want beautiful landscaping, good gardens and beautiful open space areas. He said, and that's how you'll sell the development. And when I heard that, I thought about some of these retirement villages you go into. Every unit's virtually the same, but their gardens are beautiful, and you're drawn to the trees and the gardens. So just another perspective on it. So, and my thoughts, thank you.
Anticipating a move, Councillor Hewlett?
Well, I am over 55, so it's on the cards.
Councillor Golay?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Since being elected, I've sort of banged on about the design and why can't we have some sort of input, and I think this document meets that criteria now. So thanks to the officers who did take our information on board and help to design this. I just hope the industry takes it on, because in some of the meetings I've had, there still seems to be this old trend of, look, don't tell us how to do it, whereas I think this document actually gives them some real picturesque guidelines of how to make possibly a townhouse development look very characteristic to the area and more appealing to the eye, and hopefully that in itself will meet the standard where a person like myself, nearing my 50s, can downsize into something from a 5-bedroom into, you know, a 2-bedroom that's quite stylish, and I don't lose that characteristic of lifestyle. So well done. Thank you.
Any other comments? Councillor Tolte?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just note that I do see a lot of the comments that I hear from the smarter designers and builders in relation to unit developments reflected in here. There's a lot of consideration given to smart engineering to allow for cross-ventilation and northerly aspects, solar aspects, counter-levered verandas to provide greater space for private open space and better use of the footprint without actually enlarging the footprint. So there's lots of ideas in here about variation of materials and surfaces to give better street impact and smarter design. So I think that the outcome that's being sought will be taken up by industry, because this actually does reflect what the smarter people in the industry say anyway.
Please. Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to sum up with the officer's recommendation that... Sorry?
Not yet.
Yeah.
Just you had your hand up. Sorry, I thought you were going to comment. No, you're right. Any other comments, councillors? Sorry, Councillor Hughes. You had your hand up and I thought you were commenting.
I'm ready to go.
I'll come back to you when we're done. That's all good. Just quickly, I think it's really important to note that this is not a legislative requirement. It's been born out of some of the frustration we've had with our current plan, and you know, we won't mention some of those areas where we've actually got to get our plan right first, councillors, and that's still in draft form to really address it. We will be facing a great deal of this medium density in parts of the city. We talked yesterday about the missing middle. This is probably as best it's going to get for us if that scheme is approved in its current form. So to getting some design principles to encourage developers in that space to use will be a good outcome, not just for us now, but into the future. But I think it's really important for everyone to understand that this is the most we can do under the legislation that is, that we are required to abide by, which is the Sustainable Planning Act, etc. So whatever it is now. Is it still the Sustainable Planning Act? No, it's a Planning Act. So, yeah. So just to be clear, that we can only encourage and influence, and we're doing that in two ways, and the officers have gone out of their way to deal with the issues based on what we've learnt and what's out there outside of the city to provide this. We're also demonstrating that ourselves through organisations such as Redlands Investment Corp to try to demonstrate best practice. But please, the community needs to understand that the way that the planning regime works is that we don't have complete ultimate control on the colour of roofs, etc., that some people expect us to be able to condition on applications. But good work to the officers. I'm not trying to take anything away from this. This is a great document and something that you can put in front of those developers when you're telling them that you're not really keen and you need further information. Back to you now, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. Summing up, I'm just happy to move the officer's recommendation that's up on the screen there, that Council resolves to endorse the draft multiple dwelling design guide for the purpose of public consultation for a period of 4 weeks commencing on the 5th of October 2017. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hughes. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillors, the next item is 11.3.1, Redlands Softball Association, and I believe Councillor Hughes, you're moving that recommendation.
Thank you again, Mayor. Moving 11...
Excuse me, Councillor Hughes, yes. And myself have to declare a conflict of interest as we're both patrons of the club, and I think you might be as well.
So just for the note, just for noting, for the minute,
Thank you, Wendy. Yeah.
Just before we proceed, just to note that it's a perceived conflict of interest as patrons of the club for myself, Councillor Boglari and Councillor Hughes. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Councillor Boglari. I was going to mention it, but I should have started with mentioning it. Yes, well done. Thank you. I'd like to move 11.3.1, Redlands Softball Association Incorporated, regarding their lease renewal.
Would you like to speak to it, Councillor?
Thank you. Our Redlands Softball Association is not just a local softball association. This is now a state, the country, across the country we see teams coming in, and this little softball field that's expanded over the years is now international. And we've got some issues here with the lease being up for renewal. We've got an issue with the dugouts at the moment. And while I move this and support this officer's recommendation, we acknowledge that we do have an issue with 11 dugouts at the facility at the softball grounds. These dugouts were built in the early 1980s, and we can all remember where we were then, which was over 30 years ago. The club is working with council very hard, very close, to ensure that we are able to resolve the issues with those dugouts. Thank you.
Speaker against? Comment, Councillor Boglari?
Just to give some certainty to the club, can an officer just explain that, just so it is on the record, that once the dugout issue, which is built with timber from Noah's Ark, I think, it's all rectified, the 30-year lease, which is what they usually, is what they had previously, is then done under delegated authority automatically by the CEO, is my understanding? Yep, I just wanted that clarified so the club has that certainty.
Well, to see if we've got an officer who can respond to that. Pardon me.
And there, I just wanted
you want
it
officer
said.
To articulate
yep,
it. My
yep,
apologies.
Just said it verbally here today, so that the.
I'll just get the officer to an officer who would be the right person. Peter, it'd be you. Come on.
Well, it might be clear in the explanation.
Through you, Madam Mayor, to the Deputy Mayor. Yes is the answer.
Councillor Bishop.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a great club, and the work they do is extraordinary for so many, not just girls, but people across the city. And with the potential arrival of international events, we want to make it as easy for them to do that as possible. And I'm looking forward to the dugout issue being clarified. I've just got a rather pedantic point that I'd like to ask. When yesterday we were sent the policy document relating to tenure terms, I just think it's worth us bearing in mind that on the second page, tenure term number one, the period of standard lease term will be up to 10 years, comma, with leases of up to 20 or 30 years where the lessee invests significant funds into infrastructure. I would like us to be clear from this point forward, if not prior, as to why this is 10 years, not 10 years, and just want to be clear about that. I know that we want to give them certainty, not disputing that for a second, but I do think it's important that we have a hierarchy in relation to this, and I just want to call that into question, because what's proposed here is 30 years, and I just want to understand what that's based on when this policy states that.
Well, I think partly the recommendation addresses that by suggesting that they have to invest before they get that 30-year lease. Am I not correct? So my understanding is that that's exactly what we're asking for them to get, that 30-year lease. Is that correct, Peter? Am I...
Madam Mayor, correct. The assessments, if I may, to the councillor's question, in relation to the policy, it's the assessment by officers in relation to leasing is done on a case by case basis. For the tenure of the lease, this is a highly prominent facility to the Redlands and to the country. In some instances, folks come from all over the place to play softball all year round, day and night. The club or the association has invested in the past. Most recently, they've co-invested with council for lighting, and that style of investment to maintain the facilities at a contemporary playing standard going forward will require investment. On this occasion, we believe 30 years to be appropriate.
Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? There being none, hand back to Councillor Hughes to sum up if necessary.
No, thank you, Mayor. Just the officer's recommendation. We acknowledge that we're giving the licence initially for 12 months while we sort this issue of the dugouts out, and then it will be a 30-year lease. So thank you. 1 year now, 30 years to follow immediately the dugout issue is sorted.
Councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. There is no mayoral minute nor notice of motion to repeal or amend, so I'll go straight to the notices of motion. And Councillor Edwards, you're first off the cab rank.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Item 14.1.1, closed circuit security, Simbi Chamber of Commerce. I move that the Council revolves as follows. The Council consents to the Southern Moreton Bay Islands Chamber of Commerce to install their closed circuit security monitoring equipment on the Southern Moreton Bay Island jetties and waiting sheds. And two, that consent is conditional upon the following. The equipment remains the property of the Southern Moreton Bay Islands Chamber of Commerce. The Council is not responsible for the maintenance, repair or replacement of the equipment. And the Council is not responsible for monitoring the cameras.
Councillor Edwards, I just wanted to raise in our discussions, there was just talk about the liability.
At that time, our legal counsel advised that the public liability was automatically covered in council's insurance, okay. So that's why I haven't made it.
My apologies, because I had to leave the room after that discussion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Councillors, that's the motion that we have in front of you. There's been discussion. Seconded to the motion? Councillor Boglari, would you like to speak to it further, Councillor?
Yes, I would. I've got a few points here, just so, and particularly the public have some idea of what's happening here. Security at our island jetties has long been a concern for our island community as a result of unsocial behaviour, some vandalism and some criminal activity. And several years ago, I had discussions with island police who advocated to me for CCTV as a deterrent and would also assist in their investigations. Our council position has and continues to be that CCTV monitoring of public areas should not be a council responsibility. As a result, community groups petitioned elected members from other levels of government, and our federal member, Andrew Lamming, arranged a Commonwealth grant of $10,000 to the Bay Islands Chamber of Commerce to purchase several cameras for installation in and around the island jetties. The Chamber then partnered with the island-based police and the Redland Bay Police to determine the best locations for the cameras to be installed. As a result of these discussions, placement of cameras on the island jetties provides the best observation point, and it's for this reason that I bring this motion to us today. The cameras are to be installed inside vandal protection boxes and are connected by Wi-Fi. The high-definition cameras are accessed by only the police via smartphone technology, and they don't require physical access to retrieve footage. The police can view live stream and recorded video up to 6 months old from anywhere through their smartphone. There is no council involvement at all other than allowing the installation on the jetties. I understand that council's insurance regarding public liability extends to fixtures on council property. I also understand that as a matter of administrative compliance, officers will ensure that installation will be subject to council's compliance rules and professional standards, and that this is a standard practice, and as a result, the motion does not refer to that. The cameras do need an electrical supply and will need to be wired into the existing power lines at the jetties. I understand that each camera draws about 8 watts an hour. Now, for me to put this into perspective, Origin charged me at my household 15 cents a kilowatt night rate and 24 cents at peak rate. And I'm sure the council has a lot lower costs than that. Based on an average of 20 cents a kilowatt, one camera uses 4 cents of electricity a day. So it's 4 cents a day for a camera. As such, I believe council should provide the electricity as a community service. It should also be noted that the island's community are already collecting donated funds to expand the CCTV network, and future cameras could be installed on privately owned properties and commercial space. The community is fully supportive of this initiative and they are driving the project. I believe that this is a unique project that could be a template for other areas in Queensland. It removes councils from the financial burden whilst empowering residents to work with and support the local police. I'll just touch on that at the moment. I believe the Chamber of Commerce is in discussions with QPS at the moment for QPS to fund in their budget all the future maintenance and ongoing services of these cameras. Any community group or even an individual can talk with their local police to see if CCTV is supported and then engage to raise funds through donations or grants and work directly with the police. Councillors, I ask you to support this motion and in doing so, support our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Speaker against? Some comments? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Bishop?
Well done and good on the Chamber of Commerce down there and... dare I say publicly, well done to Andrew Lemming. I hope he's kept the template, though. I hope that one's recorded. honestly, the security issues we have at jetties across the city is escalating. I mean, we're getting more people, more tourists. I guess we can expect that. I got off the ferry after whatever country music thing we went and had a look at about a year ago, and you know, friends went that way and I had to walk that way, and I will admit I felt a little bit vulnerable as a, you know, a woman on her own down there. So I'm very glad that you're getting this equipment. My second reason and why I hope Andrew's kept the template is we also have security reason issues around Wellington Point. The police do randomly from time to time borrow camera gear from Logan for me and put it up, but it's not there permanently. And it's as if the hoons know. Honestly, I can't believe it. And however this works, I'll be following it and talking with you. And once I know it's successful and you've ironed out all the bugs for me, I definitely will be following this up for the Wellington Point jetty. And I'm sure Councillor Hewlett's also mentioned it, you know, the security issues in his areas and that too. So well done, and I know it will be successful because no one likes the camera looking at them.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've got a couple of clarifications I just want to make. One is in relation to the tenure. I asked that question of our legal counsel yesterday. I just want to be reminded of the response to, does there need to be a sunset clause or a period of time identified for an agreement? If I may, through you, Madam Mayor, refer to the General Counsel on that.
Is Andrew? Hello, Andrew. Yep.
Yeah, we'd enter into a standard license agreement with the organisation, which would have the standards, and that would probably be open to negotiation while being practical.
Okay, so yeah, clarification that it's something like a 12-month standard term would be part of the negotiations. That's good to be aware of. The second thing is the third dot point that council is not responsible for the monitoring of the camera. Just again, the pedant in me, the camera is not the thing that we need to watch. It's the monitoring of the footage. I just wonder whether we need to identify that in your motion. It's not...
The only party who have access to it are the police, Queensland Police Service. They're the only ones.
Yeah, so council's not responsible for the monitoring of the camera or the footage. Yeah. So now I'll just speak more broadly about it. I totally understand that this is a citizen-involved process that looks at addressing closed circuit security monitoring as an outstanding need within the community that some people feel as though is very important. When it's been brought to us in the past, it hasn't been recommended, partly because of the monitoring elements. And while I want to acknowledge that this is a unique and innovative approach going forward and may have other applications, I'm going to watch it with a little caution and remind us to be mindful of the fact that we are at a time where digital communication and potential surveillance and monitoring is moving rapidly into a, well, it's an evolving future, and where groups such as the Southern Moreton Bay Islands Chamber of Commerce may negotiate a place to put a camera, and it may be on council infrastructure, and it may be part of a broader campaign to look at putting cameras in lots of other places, I think we could be ending up going down a path that the same council that has guided me into suggesting that council should not get involved with this could actually result in a different result where authorities are not necessarily in charge of where these get put, but people with good ideas about how to play cowboys and sheriff's badges want to put stuff around the city. And I'm concerned that it might, I'll watch this space as we go forward, but I do believe that there's a potential for this to turn into an unmodified and unmonitored element of Big Brother, where cameras get put up wherever people kind of can get someone to say, hey, I want it, and I'll take responsibility for it, and we end up with cameras everywhere. And it's not necessarily aligned to the authority, and that being state government, federal government, local council. Monitored by the police, but I'm just alerting to...
Clear, the cowboys and sheriff you're talking about are the local police.
Well...
Correct? Am I correct in saying so? This
well,
is
in terms
not...
of monitoring,
yes.
but not in terms of establishing where these might go.
I think they have been party to that, yes.
That's right. So you suggested that the chamber may have other interests in other places where they would like them to go. Yeah. Again, I still think that tying this to state or local council or federal government support, I mean, the police may want something, the Southern Moreton Bay Islands Chamber may want something, and they may invent a network of where cameras could or should go. And I, as a citizen, want to hold the mirror up to that and question it about whether that is something that we just want to unleash and go wherever the police and anyone who says they want cameras to go agrees. I have concerns. I'm going to vote against in this instance based on the information that I've been given previously. But I do support this innovative approach. I'll watch it with interest and hold my concerns and put my hand down when it gets asked to go up in favour.
Thank you, Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to say that I fully support this initiative. I think it's long overdue that council step into this space. I know council's not stepping into it, but we're allowing it through this motion. I think Wendy and I advocated for CCTV back about 4 years ago when we had that meeting. And it's not only the jetties. The predominant issue, the complaints I get from Coochie Mudlow Island, for example, are in the Victoria Point car park where there's break-ins, you know, routinely in the car park, vehicles being... I know there's dash cams, there's nothing that... When we went out to look at the parks at Ipswich with that bus tour recently, the smart city with those hardwired monitors in those parks, and the police reacted to those, I thought was absolutely brilliant. And I think the best way forward for this council is to arrange a either tie in with Logan, or I'm not sure what Logan do, but I've seen what Ipswich do, tie in with them, even if we can tie in with their monitoring. So we don't have to have a monitor here. We can tie in with them and install the cameras here. Social, you talk to the police, social issues, petty crime, such as graffiti. I think there was an assault at Wellington Point recently. You'd have to be blind not to see the outcomes of these CCTVs across the state. They're at train stations. There's 17 CCTVs.
Yeah, the council's well off track here. We're not...
I'm just advocating for more... Well, all I'm saying is this isn't new. There's 17 CCTVs, I think, on the new TransLink terminal.
The motion before us is in regards to allowing access to our facility for the police to monitor.
My concern is Coochie Mudlow Island will now be running the same on the jetty, and how we're going to fund that. So I'm just hoping that we can look at funding this out of CIF next year or something, if that's available.
I don't think that's what this motion is suggesting. So just coming back to the motion, because what's happened here, let me make this very clear, is that security and the safety of our residents is the responsibility of the state government through the police. In this instance...
However, three councils around us do it.
That's right, at great expense to their community. And I would like to congratulate Councillor Edwards' model, which actually pulls the police into being responsible for what they are paid to be responsible for.
I think it was Andrew Lemming Shark Tank that pulled the police into it, but anyway.
Well, the police are there, and that's the if I was to advocate for a model, it's one where council isn't actually kicking its ratepayers for a few more bucks to do the state government's job.
Depends what value you put on safety, though.
I put absolute value on safety, and I'd like to make sure that those responsible who are paid for that and collect the revenue and taxes for do that are doing that for our city as they are, as should be for every other resident in every other city. But I appreciate your passion for this subject, Councillor Hewlett. I think we need to get back to the motion, which is about just allowing access for the police and the chamber to be able to fund and monitor a CCTV. Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. I'm only supporting this because of those conditions. This is a safe community. I don't want us going around. And I actually said, I was in Warwick the other day and took pictures sent to Councillor Hewlett because I know of his passion for the cameras. This is a safe community. This is the only one I'll agree to. Council won't be funding it. I would be surprised if we did on SIP or whatever funding we have, but I'm not going down that route.
Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, I'll be supporting it based on those conditions. It isn't council responsibility, but where we can cooperate with others taking that responsibility, including our community, that's great. I think it's been terrific work done to get a model that gives a great benefit on a single case, and perhaps will give us a model moving forward. So on that basis, I'll support it. But certainly I also acknowledge Councillor Bishop's concerns, things like data security, where we place these things, but that's going a big step beyond today, where we have an individual case well thought out, great partnership, and I think just the right amount of council support and intervention delivers a good outcome in a specific location. Thanks.
Any other comments? I just wanted to make it very, very clear for everyone that this is not council starting to be involved in state government responsibilities with CCTV. I totally concur with Councillor Elliott. We've seen quite enough cost shifting to this council, and when we come to budgets and we have to fight for the dollars that we want to spend in each of our divisions, I don't see us being able to accommodate what could be up to $1 million of monitoring costs, which should be funded and supported by the state. That's a reality. The cost of the infrastructure is cheap. In fact, it's probably getting cheaper. The cost of monitoring, however, is getting more expensive. Now, I totally applaud Councillor Edwards for being able to get the Queensland Police Service on board, and it will be to their advantage because they have limited number of police officers to be able to deal with that in this city. Another element of making sure that we're getting our fair share of state government operational funding in this city. The last thing I'm going to do is support a state government responsibility with a budget bid to you councillors who have much more important things delivering in your local government responsibilities. So if we can duplicate this model, and I'd suggest Councillor Hewlett and others that if you've got communities of interest that you can go to them, and if they really value that particular project, they will kick in and hopefully get the police and the state government to support that. But gone are the days where we can continue just to take the responsibility of state government or federal government for that matter and continue to fund it. And I could sit here and give you a list right now, but that would be completely off topic and I wouldn't be meeting the standing orders. But I want to just congratulate Councillor Edwards for being able to pull this together. I think the cost of electricity is neither here nor there in the bigger picture of things. And if it delivers an outcome that gets the police more involved in the safety of our community, it's a win for everybody. So back to you, Councillor Edwards, to sum up, and then we'll put the motion.
Yes, thank you. Just to sum up, to make it absolutely clear, they're just using our facility, and I think probably the motion actually sets out in very clearly that this is not the realm of council, because we're not owning it, we're not monitoring, maintaining it, but there is another way for citizenry to be involved in assisting the police.
I'll put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Bishop. Moving on to the next notice of motion, Councillor Edwards, would you like to put forward your motion?
Thank you. Yes, 14.2.1, engage with the Department of Education and Training, re Kings Road, Russell Island. The Council resolves as follows: the Council engage with the Department of Education and Training to enter into an agreement that enables community use of land located 1731 Kings Road, Russell Island, and that officers bring back a report on the conditions of any agreement prior to signing.
Thank you. Seconded by Councillor Elliott. And back to you, Mark.
Thank you. Look, I'll just give you a little bit of history. There's already been work done in this space. Officers have already commenced a number of years ago. It came about, this land is next to council sports fields. It's about 15 acres. It's owned by Education Queensland for a proposed future high school, which I've been insured by the Director of Education that won't be happening. It's surplus to their use because the models they use now for schools require a lot higher populations of what the islands will be able to provide. But several years ago, this land, which is an old farm, the community groups wanted to do some gardening on part of it, which is naturally cleared. It's grassland. The land consists of a lot of conservation areas, old dams and things like that. But the eastern side is basically cleared. And there was discussions with the ABC TV program, Gardening Australia, about doing some monthly segments on the community garden, going in there, starting to build a little thing, not a large scale, and they would come back and do little vignettes and show the progress over 12 months and the community getting behind it. The officers actually engaged during that time with the Department of Education about council using that land. However, with officers resigning and moving on, that didn't proceed. And recently, when the Director of Education was over on the island, he looked at the land and spoke to myself and other people in the community, and they are keen for the surplus land assets to be used by the local community, and the most efficient way for that is to allow council to form some sort of an agreement and use. Conditions of council use should be brought back to us and not signed off on, so we should have some sort of understanding. So what I'm just seeking is support that process, which has already begun, continue to come to a position that officers feel is suitable for us and not an impost on council, and to bring that back to council and for us to make a decision at that point in time of whether we'll undertake a trusteeship or whatever of that property for community use.
Do we get a movement second to that? We did. Yes. So, a speaker against? Okay. Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Bishop, comment?
Yeah, totally support this, and particularly welcome the growing of food and the attraction of that practice of national interest. it is an innovative use of land. It's one of the oldest things that humans have ever done, and it's one of the things that Redlands is most famous for, and I encourage that use that sustains the food that we all need every single day, and welcome that in our area as a priority, and support council encouraging the community to reclaim that use of land. The foundation of economics is household management. Using those available lands in such a way that we can sustain ourselves, support it, absolutely.
Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I should declare a conflict of interest because I'm married to a teacher. Seriously, though. directors of education are directors of whatever change with governments. And last time I spoke to someone about a secondary school in Russell Island, there was a lot of interest there. The islands are growing exponentially. There's two primary schools over there now, and I believe there will be a site required in the future for a secondary facility on those islands. So I'll look at the agreement, but I just hope that there's a way out, because I think future governments will want to put a secondary school over there. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? There being none, back to you, Councillor Edwards.
Yes, I'll just put the clarification for Councillor Hewlett. The Department of Education Training actually own two sites of land on Russell Island, and there's room for building any potential school on that other side.
And a university.
All right, Councillor, thank you. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion's carried unanimously. On to the next notice of motion, Councillor Boglari.
Thank you. I'd like to move that Council resource and review the Natural Environment Policy, POL 3128, and develop the strategies to set the direction of the policy.
Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Thank you. I've just got a little bit here to try and put in context why I've brought this here today. Number one, we all know that we live in Redlands in a great natural environment, geographical position, which is, I think, amazing to live here with capital cities at our doorstep. And we've also got international airports, two of them. And we're opened up to a considerable number of people that can come to Redlands for day trips and holidays, which all goes towards our tourism. And in our tourism policy, it actually says that Council is committed to promoting Redlands as a high-quality tourism destination and encourages the development of sustainable nature-based heritage and ecotourism. And the natural environment policy is part to developing that ecotourism. So it's not just about being responsible citizens and caring for our environment. It's also about bringing money and jobs to our city and building our tourism policy and our economy. I just want to say that's two reasons for it, but also I want to mention what the state government has done at the moment. They've set up a koala expert panel, and their findings will feed into the South East Queensland Regional Panel. The interim report really has no new data that those of us in Redlands don't already know. I've read it, and it's basically everything which we've been told and we know over the last few years have had discussions in here. The loss of a koala habitat is considered to be the threat, having the greatest impact on koala conservation, and that urban development is the primary cause of habitat loss. The koala was listed as vulnerable to extinction across its full range in Queensland, that despite protection measures to date, the peri-urban koala populations in the Koala Coast, which covers all of Redlands, are not showing any evidence of their rate of decline slowing. And this decline is related to ongoing habitat loss in southeast Queensland, resulting from increasing urbanisation, threats of dog attacks and road mortalities associated with the development and disease. The Koala Expert Panel consulted with the community, and the largest number of respondents were located in Redlands, with 22% of the submissions coming from Redlands, and the next highest was Moreton Bay at 15%. So this shows the level of passion and concern that our Redlands residents have for our environment. And the biggest concern from all the areas of submissions was habitat loss. That was the biggest one that the public was concerned about. So the interim report calls for strategic solutions, that the complexity of the regulatory framework be lessened so that we have at the moment there are inconsistent outcomes and uncertainty due to the complexity of it all. It states that offsets are not working, mapping and monitoring needs urgent review, but it also says koalas in the urban areas pose a challenging problem. The task force considered that solutions to the main urban koala populations may be addressed by strong community and local government engagement. So local government engagement for the urban koala. The report has possible recommendations on immediate actions, which include monitoring, precincts, grants and mapping. The final report from the Koala Task Force was supposed to be publicly released in August, but it still hasn't been released. So what is in that report will drive the state government, and we'd be hopeful that some of it will be going into the Planning Act, which are the conditions that developer applications will have to comply with. So that's where the state government is. So what is council doing at the moment? Because whatever local councils do, it has to marry up with the state government. So when council has a policy to achieve a specific outcome or goal, to give that policy strength and actions, there are strategies and procedures or plans that also have to be developed. Council has adopted a new policy, the Natural Environment Policy, and the motion when we adopted that included to prepare updated strategies and plans to progress the Natural Environment Policy. And priorities were given to about five things. The first one was koala. So far, council has designed a new koala strategy, and a project officer has already been on staff to coordinate and implement the strategy actions. And they will implement on-ground tree planting, koala surveys, the objectives to maintain an integrated, connected, high-quality network of koala habitats across the landscape, capable of supporting a viable, sustainable population of koalas for the long term, and minimise any threats. And this new officer's job is also to get a greater understanding and connection to the community. So that's one tick. We've already got that one done, and the officer's on board already carrying it out. Corridors and networks was next, and this work has already been completed as well, totally based on scientific data, and at present it is coming to Council for adoption of the 13th of November General Meeting, and that's the timeline they're hoping to get anyway. And it is vital that this corridor work is then transferred into the new city plan, and I would hope that it would be part of the first amendment package if there is time. And this is the amount of work involved in that. So that's the wildlife connection plans and the action plans. So the officers have done a fantastic job in that one and identified the best places to have, not always along waterways, but along our foreshore and everywhere. So that's another tick that we've done. Now, the third strategy listed in the motion from 2015 is the urban trees. Now, this work has not yet commenced. However, it is due to start in early 2018 and is to assist council decision making in vegetation management, street tree scaping and asset management. The new environmental policy states appropriate street tree planting programs. The intent of these words, I remember at the time, was when we're planting trees, it is to have the appropriate tree for the appropriate space. So we don't want to go and put blue gums all over the place because we know they have to have quite a large area for their trunks, let alone their canopy. However, where a footpath or an area is wide enough, koala food trees can still be planted, and appropriate trees for appropriate areas. In light of the recent street tree clearing, I'm bringing this forward because I would like the actual work to commence on the urban tree so there is that clear understanding of the strategy and plans can be completed to ensure that streetscaping in the future, that the officers have that direction clearly to ensure koala food trees can be planted. Plantings at present are happening along Hilliards Creek, which is a huge corridor through the northern part of the city, and there are also plantings happening in Cleveland to strengthen koalas, strengthen corridors there, and to provide food and shelter trees for the Redlands urban koala. Recently, CAG, the Koala Action Group, completed a tracking project, and that's one of the other things that was mentioned from the Koala Task Force, so that's another tick for Redlands. Recently, CAG completed a tracking project which has produced valuable and factually based information on koala movement in the Cleveland area. And from this report, the importance of Pacific and individual trees even surprised CAG, I think. They did not realise certain trees were being used for shelter in the hot summer. And so if it surprises people who have been following koalas for years, it just shows the importance of this work. It supports the notion of individual trees on footpath where possible plays that valuable role. The Koala Action Group came and presented to council, and various councillors and officers went along, and their work was commended. And informally, there were discussions about how this tracking information could be used in other areas across Redlands and how constructive that would be for future planning with the corridors. The Koala Task Force also states the importance of this monitoring and tracking for data. So in Redlands, we've already commenced that, which is great. It would be good to see it also going forward. So today I ask for support to prioritise the natural environment policy, including the strategies, the urban tree strategy in particular, and the plans that plan the actions to implement it. And I want it. I'm asking for your support based on these reasons. Council reviews its policies approximately every 3 years, so the environment policy will be reviewed next year, yet one of the strategies of the five important strategies mentioned in the original motion still hasn't been completed. Council street tree planting policy is due for review this October, and the urban tree strategy is needed to feed into that policy at this upcoming review as they marry their goals. The Koala Task Force has stated that the management of the urban koala is best managed by local communities and local councils, placing an even greater importance on our urban tree strategy and the need to make it clear so that direction about the right tree in the right place, and it's not no koala food trees anywhere on footpace, is given throughout council. And based on these reasons, I ask for your support today to prioritise and resource the development of yet-to-be-completed strategies of the natural environment policy.
Speaker against? Comment? Councillor Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to acknowledge the work that Councillor Boglari has done on this, and I think it's, as you've pointed out, mostly work that officers have been doing and just needs to be married together. I'm wondering if you would be tabling those documents, as Councillor Tolte did with hers previously, to give guidance to the officers in line with what you've proposed along those lines, and I'm just wondering if that was something you were going to do proceed with. Well, I'll leave that to you. But I just want to acknowledge that we're living in a time which is it is a climate of change. It's been referred to by some of the wisest people on the planet as the Anthropocene, which is the human-dominated period of time on this planet where the humans are the major force. And I think it's worth acknowledging that there are very few places in this city where a tree would grow unless a human was originally going to permit it to be there, then to plant it there, and then to care for it. As a council, I think it's very important that we consider the civic space and have a plan for particularly urban trees that might be new plantings, and for officers to have guidance as to how and where they're going to do that based on a strategy, which I think we would clearly want to make sure was integrated and in line with what people believe is important in this city, and that is that we do have indigenous species, not only of flora and fauna. We've got iconic fauna. We've got species of flora. We would want to have a document that says which flora in what place and where not. So I think it's really important that we know where we're going to do it, how we're going to do it, and what we're going to plant. So I certainly endorse Councillor Boglari's bringing this item forward. I think it's perfect timing based on the other work that we've got. And if there's anything that's outstanding that needs to be done, I hope that that can be brought to our attention. Officers, can I just ask through you, Madam Mayor, are there any challenges that you would see that would
Well, it's a council's decision. They make it happen when we put the motion.
Yeah, I know, and in relation to that motion, I just wondered if there would be anything.
I'm happy for the officers to comment if they...
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Louise.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Deputy Mayor. Wonderful to see that level of support, so greatly appreciated from the officers. I have our group manager, Graham Simpson, sitting in the back of the room because he's also very keenly across the environment space, being group manager of environment regulation. So it's good for him to hear that conversation as well. We're very keen to be moving ahead on these strategies as quickly as possible, and I appreciate that Councillor Boglari has shared the significant work that has already occurred. We funded some work that the Koala Action Group did in relation to some of the tracking and facilitated them coming in to meet with officers and with councillors, and that information was really very valuable. And we're looking forward to seeing their report on the work that they're due to have completed by November. We've also been liaising with the Koala Expert Panel to look at any information that might come from that work that we can then take on board to assist us in the work that we're doing. So again, you know, anything that you might see come across your desk, our officers are very, very good. I'm very pleased to hear you announce the new officer that's come along. Kat is her name, who's probably a terrible name for a Koala Action Officer. Catherine, she's a lovely, lovely lady, very experienced, and she's going to be doing the work for us in that koala space. And we have a new service manager, Pippa Donaldson, who will be starting with us, I think, next week. And she's a wonderful news story for us as well, because she started as a trainee with council many, many years ago in the environment space, and she's gone off into the big wide world and is coming back to join the team. So we're very, very excited about Pippa joining us. As Councillor Boglari mentioned, we did do the policy review back in 2015, and you may also recall, councillors, that there was a delay on some of that work, predominantly because of the work that we were doing in City Plan, and to make sure that we could get the best advantage of the opportunities in City Plan, and then make sure that we captured any of the work that needed to be done in terms of our strategy development. Whenever we do strategy development, we bring that forward to Council to be able to look at resourcing and budget requirements. And as you've already heard earlier today, any of those budget requirements are a prioritisation process and a decision for Council in terms of where you want to spend the dollars and the resources moving forward. So any plans that we'd have in terms of our strategies would be up for an 18-19 budget adoption. In terms of the five strategies, despite the fact that we've had the, as you are aware, we're still waiting on the Minister for our City Plan, despite the fact that we've been in that process, we've had significant traction on the strategies that have come out of the policies. Enhance the visitor experience that City Spaces was responsible for has been completed. The Koala strategy has been completed and the implementation plans in action. The corridors and networks work is almost complete, and you've seen significant information on that space. We are already in progress, so more up-to-date information for you, councillor, in that space. It's not that we haven't started urban trees yet. We are in progress on that, and we're hoping to bring that back fairly soon, but we need to do the correct work in that space. And any work that we do come back on that will be a, if there's budget or resource requirements, we'll come back and ask for that. Offsets is also very important to us, and that's the other parcel of work. Those things, though, also need to take into account. It's a timing issue. We need to make sure we had the koala work and the corridor work so that we could then have a look at what does that mean for the offset work and the urban tree work. So there's a timing aspect. There's also Local Law 6 that we need to be bringing into the mix as well. I want to assure Council and the community that this work is coordinated, it is well managed, and it's expertly looked after by the officers in Council, and we've got some brilliant officers. And also, if we don't have the expertise, we use consultancy where we're required. But I'm very comfortable under Graham's leadership that we're going to be getting traction on these things as soon as possible. I do appreciate that we review our policies every 3 years, and that is next year that we'd be looking at reviewing that, and happy to take on board if at any time, not just at the three-year review mark, but at any time if we need to increase or improve or change our direction in any way. But I'm comfortable with the work that Graham and the team are doing to progress these strategies in line with the policy.
Thank you. that's very helpful to know, and I think it's worth our while just bearing in mind that, that the community does look to council to get the clarity as to where the appropriate trees would go in an urban tree policy. I know that out in the community there's a very strong views and very emotional views and very polarised views about whether people think certain trees should go in certain places, and some people are absolutely dead against them, others are absolutely for them. I think it's up to officers to be the ones to do the robust research to work out which tree in what place. Are there areas in our urban space where trees should be put in intentionally with the guidance of officers? And I would like to think that we could do whatever possible to support that. So happy to do that going forward. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, absolutely acknowledge some of the community concerns around any habitat loss and certainly the frustration, and they, the community wants to see, you know, real action. And I think this council, again, can be very proud of the long-term policy decisions we're making and the strategies moving forward. While that happens, though, we haven't been sitting on our hands. And I'd just like to share some numbers from my own division on what's been going on. These are the numbers that are provided to me by council in just the last financial year in Division 2. Our local bush care group, just 100 plants have been planted by them. Our trees and landscaping people, 382, including 174 koala food trees. Our conservation team, 7,446 plants, including 623 koala food trees. So a total of 7,928 plants, including 797 koala food trees, just in Division 2, this last year. So that's great. Not only that, I've been working with our council officers, and they've been terrific looking at the urban trees, the right species, right spot, right times. This is practical, real work that we're working on right now. And this coming year, this is being planned and undertaken, but we're on the front foot. Plantings around Ross Creek from the showgrounds right to Ross Creek Park, Nandibi Park, Erebon Street, Cleveland, Oyster Point Park in Cleveland, and right through to Council Golly's area, Henry Zinfius Park, and Beach Street. So pretty important areas. So, you know, just trying to demonstrate that we're not sitting on our hands, we're taking things seriously, and we're doing... You know, we're getting results, real results and practical results, not just talking about it and talking about policies. We're actually delivering, and we're delivering now. Again, acknowledging it can never be perfect and there are losses occurring. So I think it's never been more important that we coordinate our efforts. I think that is happening. I think the glass is over half full. I'm very pleased to have connected community groups and individuals with our council officers to work cooperatively, including our planners and also developers who have put their hand up and said, we want to work with everyone. This is happening now. So we've got to keep moving forward. Any problems of the past, we can't change them. But, gee, we can work on the future, and I think we're doing a good job on that. And let's keep going. So I encourage everyone to keep the channels wide open and work together, because I think the future's looking good and the intent of everyone is very sound. Thanks.
Any other comments, councillors? Thank you. I'll hand back to Councillor Boglari to sum up.
Thank you. I just think our environment down here in Redlands is just so precious, and we're so blessed to actually have some. The chances of building our economy through ecotourism is, I think it's endless, our possibilities, and the koala is a main attraction there. I always remember Oprah Winfrey, when she came out a couple of years ago, she climbed the Opera House and then she went and hugged a koala, and while she had the koala, she said, I can go home now. She said, I've seen the Opera House and I've hugged a koala, and that's what she'd come to Australia for. And I think if you don't see the importance of our environment and our koala just for the sake of what they are, then you can look at the money value that we can get from them as well. There's no matter what angle you look at it, protecting our environment is number one, I believe, for Redlands. And getting this policy, I just want it sewn up. I just want it, the clear direction coming from it. I want it to be finalised. I want all the strategies there to feed into it, to give it the strength. And this urban tree one to be is highly important at the moment, especially with the Koala Task Force saying that the urban koala is going to become the responsibility or the management of it from local councils. And I think having Pacific trees for food and shelter in between, to have a stop gaps in between the corridors, is something that we also have to be significantly thinking of, and this is the policy and the strategy that will do that for us.
Just before I put the motion, I'd just like to just also remind people in the gallery and councillors that at the end of the day, state legislation dictates many of the things that we can and can't do. And in fact, this is in their domain just as much as in ours. And the palming off of urban koalas to local government needs to be scrutinised. So I just think we need to be very, very careful of what expectations we create, because we know legislation doesn't always fit with the expectations of the community. With that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Thank you. Carried unanimously. And Councillor Tolte is absent. We don't have any urgent business without notice, but we do need to go into closed session, so if I'll get a mover to close. Is there any discussion required, councillors? No discussion required? No discussion required? Don't start talking about it. Don't, any detail? So you're comfortable not going into closed session? I just wanted to be, you just can't talk about it while it's an item of confidentiality, that's all. All right, so I can't hear any people concerned about the confidentiality, so I'm going to go through the motions, councillors, if I may. So the first one is 16.1.1, mover and seconder, thank you. Move Councillor Elliott, seconder Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously and Councillor Tolte is absent. Item 16.2.1, the resumption of easement for open space. Mover and seconder, thank you. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 16.2, aerial application of mosquito treatments. Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Tolte remains absent, if that's okay, rather than repeating it. 16.2.3 is the Cleveland Library Environmental Management Register. Could I just get a mover and seconder? Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 16.3.1, councillors, mover and seconder, if I may. Item 16.3.1 is moved by Councillor Mitchell, seconded by Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 16.32, move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. There's just one other item that we need. There's a couple of items, actually. So we're back into public session, councillors, so I understand it. Wait a minute, let me just double check here. What have I done here? No, sorry, wait a minute, have I missed something? Oh, no, meeting closure. I was just testing if you were listening. If there's no further items, and there isn't, I'll close the meeting at 12:49. Thank you, councillors.